I'd like to convene the Finance Committee. We do have a quorum present, and by way of announcements, I've already been off to a very good day. It happens to be my birthday tomorrow, and some of the staff, Carrie Fine and Joanna and Lil, brought some treats this morning, and there are still some that remain at the back table there, and I think there's another box of donuts that are coming down. So through the committee hearing, and it's probably going to be a long one because we have four major bills, so as long as the treats last, help yourself. Technically, my birthday is tomorrow, but we're celebrating it today. So, well, thank you. And by the way, yeah, the big 40, yeah. And the other thing I do have to acknowledge is that Lil and Joanna provided me with a tie for today. And for those of you that are too far to see, it's in addition to the red color, there are some donkeys on it. And for my Republican friends and colleagues, I assume that some store somewhere must have one with an elephant, but this one has got the donkey.
Not anymore.
Okay. with that, we'll start with the minutes of April the 15th. And Representative Emmer, have you reviewed the minutes?
I have. Okay.
And would you make a motion for approval? Okay, the motion is before us for the approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Saying none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Before we start with Representative Greiling's bill, as all of you know, we have four bills up today. The goal, if we work hard, is to get the bills done today. Under the rule, we technically have tomorrow and Sunday. The goal, however, is to get these four bills out of the way today so we don't have to come in tomorrow, although the room is reserved if need be. The one bill that will not be coming out under the deadline as provided for in rules will be the Health and Human Services bill. And there has been a lot of difficulty, as all of you know, from the governor's original proposal, and then after that the economic stimulus and different things that have happened to get the fiscal notes and the information necessary to move forward has been a little more difficult, let me put it that way, than in previous years. So the way that rule will operate, and I've been asked by several people, is that when that bill is done, and hopefully it will probably be sometime middle of next week, instead of the usual motions that we have where a bill would either go to Ways and Means or sometimes taxes and then Ways and Means, that bill will have to go from here to the Rules Committee. And, you know, the rules do provide for various options if need be, and that's the option if you can't meet the deadline for whatever reason with a given bill. Then it would go to Rules, and then Rules would refer that back to Ways and Means. So that's more a procedural kind of thing when it goes through Rules. They would have a conversation about as long as what I just did, an explanation as to why it didn't meet the deadline, and then they would make the re-referral. So hopefully today then we will be done with everything with the exception of the Health and Human Services bill. Now we do, these are the only bills, by the way, that come under the rule for the deadline for the Finance Committee. And Ways and Means would be in the same situation. And we do have some other significant bills that will be coming forward after today. To mention a couple of them, one would be the LCCMR bill, for example, and another would be Representative Mary Murphy's Heritage Finance bill that will be coming forward. Those are not designated under the rule that the other major appropriations bills are designated or outlined in the rule. So we will be continuing to meet, and there may be some, in fact, I know there will be some other miscellaneous bills as well. So Representative Mariani and Representative Greiling will begin with the K-12 bill. And Representative Greiling, do you have a motion?
I do, Mr. Chair, but first I would like to say happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
And we will try to do our part so you get your free birthday tomorrow and don't have to have this committee heading into the race.
Well, thank you. I wish that Ann Wintesky knew that. I think Jack may be meeting tomorrow. But maybe she'll get done tonight.
Yeah, maybe. But with that, Mr. Chair, I would move the K-12 Education Finance Division report for House File 2, the first committee in Grossman.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Greiling?
Mr. Chair, members, I move House File 2, the first committee in Grossman, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the committee on passage.
The motion is before us, and you have an amendment, Representative Greiling. Do you want to explain the bill and then take the amendment, or take the amendment first?
Mr. Chair, since it's a technical amendment, it's something that the staff brought to me. I prefer to take it first.
Okay. Is the chair to move the amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, I move the A46 amendment, which is technical language, removing some unnecessary duplicative language and some language that creeped in that wasn't supposed to be in the bill. Rogue language is what I think they told me it was.
Okay. Any motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. And if you could walk us through the bill and... By the way, there will be some motions I should have mentioned for the alignment purposes. We dealt with one the other night, and there will be some motions, and this is one bill that will be involved with some of the alignment motions as well. When Representative Greiling is done, there will be another motion by Representative Mary Murphy. Okay, Representative Greiling.
Very good. Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to start out, and because it is the K-12 omnibus bill, it includes not just the finance portion, but very significant policy portions. And so I'll go through some highlights of the bill, and then Representative Mariani will go through some of the highlights of the policy bill. There's some significant and very good policy in this bill that his committee worked on carefully. The goal of our bill this year, because it is such a large deficit year, we felt that we are doing a really good thing for schools to not cut them, to keep the funding stable. And we also thought, as long as we were keeping the funding stable and not adding new money, that the last thing we should do is add any new mandates. So we fought very hard, despite many of us who like things like FIAS standards very much, not to put anything in there, and we hope that members in the House of Representatives will honor that message. Even though we like them, we cannot put new mandates in there this year. We also sought to reduce the mandates that we do have and make the money more flexible. Like last year, when we had the opportunity for all districts to transfer funds from their operating capital to the general fund, up to $51 per pupil, that is in this bill. We had a whole mandate reduction committee that looked at things like that. We have the reform that's in the policy that Representative Mariani will talk about, encouraging innovation choice, greater accountability, and better results. And then to bridge when we are in what I call a Spartan year for education funding with no new funding, we have the hope in the 2014 year to start implementing the new Minnesota Miracle that our committee has worked on so carefully with education groups all around the state. And hopefully that can happen sooner if the economy turns around. But we would like to get that into law so we can work towards it. We do have, unfortunately, a large shift in this bill with the aid payment shift and the property tax recognition shift. And the shifts are larger than the governor's. Normally, we pay the schools 90% of their money and 10% later. And now in this bill, it's $73.27 for $1.15 billion per biennium. But we felt that was better than a cut, and the school districts do too. The property tax recognition shift is 49.1% of the property taxes are recognized this June, which is another one-time savings of $600 million for the biennium. Again, this is one-time money. It doesn't help us out in the next biennium. Then we did use $275.6 million of federal stabilization funds. Those are used to offset cuts in the general education aid, and it's not a loss or a gain for schools, but just holds them harmless in this time of deficit. And then we did put in $7.2 million to help the district in statutory operating debt who are not able to deal with those shifts. We didn't change any levies at all. And then I just want to mention three other highlights that I touched on, Mr. Chair. One is the mandate reduction. We have some shared services legislation worked on by Representatives Quills and McFarland, and we have the mandate reduction that I referred to that was chaired by Representative Tilbury and a bipartisan work group. We pushed back the implementation of revised standards, which is something that cost districts a lot of time and money, and we thought that would give them more flexibility, Representative Dietrich's suggestion. And then we, as I said, saved, I think, significant money with special education changes, and that was a bill by Representative Newton. And it was actually the school board, special ed directors, and advocacy groups like CAESR and NAMI that came to agreement, knowing we needed to do something to curtail that fast-growing budget. Integration revenue was a recommendation from the auditor from 2005. We got started on it this year through the work of Representative Newton and Brown, with defining what is integration revenue for and what should plans have to include that we have districts send to the department on how they're spending the money with more transparency, including the cities of the first class in doing those plans like the other districts. Representative Slocum did work on charter schools that Representative Mariani may talk about, another legislative auditor report. Representative Benson did some interesting policy work that Representative Mariani may talk about, as well as better measurement of schools and best practices. Just everything else on here is policy, like that I have on my list of highlights. But I'm going to leave those to Representative Mariani. And then finally, I will say one more time, Representative Biskin knows, because he serves on education finance, that I like to start and end with the new Minnesota Miracle, and it is an incredible bill that was brought to us last year by the CF Minnesota Coalition. We have it in this bill. Unfortunately, we cannot begin with the deficit, but it's a huge step forward just to put it into statute so it's there and cannot be forgotten with all the work that's been done and such a need for equitable and adequate funding for schools. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would turn it over to Representative Mariani.
Okay, Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, members, I will be very brief. Representative Gladden covered in Broadway some of the major policy pieces, but I want to lift up some of the others that perhaps she had mentioned. There is a lot of good policy in the bill. You can feel good about the nature, members, of how they came together. The policy committee did a lot of very intensive engagement with both local and national experts, academicians, researchers. We worked, I believe, very well with the Department of Education. I think there's probably just a couple of items that were a little bit at odds, but for the most part, things in the past have tripped us up. I think we worked very collegially with the department this year. There is, notably on that, there's a continuing effort on the part of the committees and hopefully the legislature to modernize our school accountability system. Representative Briner's work in regards to introducing multiple measures into our school report card takes a big step forward, and we're happy to report that we worked very closely and collegially with with the executive branch in that regard. We're also pushing forward with modernizing and creating better and more helpful testing system in our state. Representative Kalin's computer adaptive testing proposals, which the governor is apparently very strongly interested in, is a good way for us to modernize our testing system, and that's in this bill. You all have heard that probably the single most important element, if you had to boil it down to one element for K-12 outcomes, is the quality of our teachers in our schools. Representative Kalin's work in terms of teacher professional development that moves our current system of recertification beyond just the mere input to a much more guided professional output measure way to recertify teachers, I think is a bold and modernistic movement forward. That's in this bill. Representative Greiling talked about the shared services. We have a different approach than what the Senate has proposed, which acknowledges that, in fact, there's quite a bit of shared services happening in our school districts. And so we're looking to really find ways to facilitate them to do more of that. There's a lot of charter school reform, quite frankly, major reform with charter school laws. So basically really centered around making charter schools much more accountable and addressing some inherent unintended consequences that have created conflicts of interest within that public sector, broad stakeholder involvement in that effort. Perhaps the most contentious piece, but it's a good thing for us to struggle with, is we also attempt to address the, in my opinion, the coming and, frankly, I think unnecessary tragedy of thousands of students not graduating from high school next year because of their inability to pass one single log math test. We're creating a temporary solution as we continue to work toward a much more comprehensive solution that would create a different way for us to properly measure students as they exit our high school system. I will reiterate, Representative Greiling talked about integration aid. I think we're taking some very bold steps forward in regards to modernizing and updating our intent and our purpose for integration aid, and hopefully will set us up to be able to do some very deep, meaningful, difficult work in the coming interim so that we can then continue to fulfill modernizing our approach to desegregation in our state, addressing achievement gap issues, and properly resourcing schools with the aid to do that work. So with that, Mr. Chair, members, I mean, it would take hours, frankly, to get into so much of what we did here, but I just want to give you a broad sense of the major topics that we've wrestled with in policy that we're putting forward in this bill.
And I just received a note, and this is quite timely. We have Representative Scott in the audience with a group of high school students from Andover. And if you could just raise your hand. I understand you're on both sides of the room. If you're from Andover High School, okay. So we have... And they're what?
Honors government students.
Well, that should play well with this committee. And the other thing is that for the benefit of the students, in addition to saying welcome, what you're observing is the presentation of the bill before the Finance Committee that funds our K-12 schools, and after this bill, I don't know how long you'll be here, we'll be taking up the higher education and workforce development bill. So with the exception of early education that we dealt with earlier this morning, at least the early part of it is going to be a major day for education. So you're here in a timely way to watch this bill and maybe even the others. With that, we'll continue then. Are there questions of committee members of either Representative Mariani or Representative Greiling on the bill? Representative Greiling?
Mr. Chair, I would make one comment. Since we have honor students here, I don't know if they are aware of the controversy with advanced placement, international baccalaureate, and college in the schools that's going on in this bill. But many legislators may have received a lot of emails, at least those of us on education are getting them. from Advanced Placement International Baccalaureate Advocates, and they are concerned about their funding. And so I just wanted to explain that maybe for the students who are here. I don't know if you are APIB college in the schools or, you know, our younger students that wouldn't be in those programs yet. But in any case, the governor cut out the funding for college in the schools, and then AP and IB are still funded. And so what we did in this bill, because we didn't have new money to replace the funding that was cut, we had them share some of the money that's there. We hope we can do better than that when we get to the conference committee, but that's kind of what the controversy is about. We don't like to pit those three wonderful programs that we support, all of them so highly, against each other, but because we weren't adding and subtracting in this bill, and we didn't hope we would come to that, but if we do come to that later on, that may turn out better than what it is right now in this bill.
Okay, very good. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riding, on page 175 of your bill, we're trying our best to make sure that that when we have an appropriation, that the legislature at some time gets to see the appropriation. And I noticed on lines 17 through 22, that you have an automatic appropriation, but at least there's a report to the legislature for those particular grants and gifts. But on lines 10 through 14, the legislature will never know how much money is in there or what it's used for. Is there a reason why you didn't have the at least the report to the appropriate commissions for the first part of Subdivision 8?
Representative Grayling.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fulberg, I'm open to including that language in there as well. We got this language from the governor's technical policy bill, and so this was part of the education policy bill that came to us, and we put in this bill. But if they wanted some kind of uniform language in all the agency budgets, statute, not just in the Department of Finance, but I would, if you had some language, even if you could, I don't know what the policy is here, but in a later committee, I'm very open to.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe I can just, if I could do an oral amendment, I think it's fairly easy to do. And the language starting on page 175.020, where the commissioner annually by February 1st must report to the Education Policy and Finance Committees the amount of money received under this subdivision and the purpose which it was granted. If I take that language and also include that then after the period on line 175.14, so that there's a report back to the committee. Generally, we'd like to have the legislature appropriate the money, but I understand this is gift. So at least we should be able to know what those gifts and grants may be and have some kind of a report to the legislature uniformly. So maybe Mr. Marks, I think I've said it correctly, and maybe Mr. Marks can help me out.
I think you have to have another change, Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, the only I think that sentence works, except you should change commissioner to board because the section 1 refers to a board.
I would incorporate that change in my motion, if I may.
Okay, does everybody follow the oral amendment? Okay, any discussion on the Solberg amendment? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Grayling, I should have asked about this earlier, but I forgot about it, which is the Purpose Center for Arts Education. I don't think you touched on that. I know that in Section 5, I think it's Article 7, there's an appropriation, and we've had some discussion about changing the structure of that funding, and I wonder if you could describe any changes in the bill aside from the appropriation amount that might be coming to Purpose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler. That's a good question because that's another topic that, you know, we tend to describe what's in the bill, not what got a lot of press but didn't get in the bill. There are no changes in this bill to the Perfect Center. However, the governor's proposal to cut a couple million out of the Perfect Center, change it to a charter school and so forth, got our attention, however, and it got the attention of the Perfect center itself as well. There are, because times have changed since the Kirby Center was started, and I thought that it was a good thing in for the process for what we might do in the future that the governor brought this idea up. When the Perfect Center started, there were no such thing as charter schools. I suspect myself, and I have for a long time, that had there been Governor Perfect, who also thought up charter schools, might have made the Perfect Center a charter school to begin with, if that option had been there. But since it was, he followed the model of the Academy of Faribault and made them a state agency. But now we have more arts high schools than just the Perfect Center. One of them, one of our committee members, who's also a committee member here, Representative Biskin, actually works that. And there are others. I went to, on his invitation, a very wonderful performance of his art high school that was in at the neighborhood house last a month or two ago. And my husband and I enjoyed it very much. And I noticed the students there looked just like Perfect students. They, I can't even imagine that the Biskin's working there. They had the purple hair and the piercings and so forth. But in any case, I think we do need to broaden the discussion. And the good news is, Representative Winkler, and I know you represent that area, if I could see you through Representative Thiessen, they are very creative people at that school, and they are going to talk about this. There's, because there's the outreach that only the Perfect Center does. Now there are the other schools. Maybe that needs to be a new model that includes some of the wonderful leadership at the other schools. There is the housing, which really isn't equitable, and they agree, for all the students all around the state. The housing is for Greater Minnesota students who go to Perfect. But Perfect has a bar that you have to get in to be accepted. If you don't make that bar, and say you're from Wilmer or Grand Rapids or Virginia, you don't get any housing to go to the other school. Only if you make the hoop to get into Perfect. Otherwise, you're a flat-on slut. So what about that? If you're, should there be more equitable housing? Should it be based on a sliding fee? Should there be more money in that pot for all students all around the state to go to any of the schools? Those are things they are going, they have promised to study, come back, and talk to us next session. And their board chair is excellent, and they have David Flannery, who used to be their executive director, has actually come out of retirement to help with this discussion, a very creative person. So thank you for letting me have that opportunity, Representative Winkler, to talk about the status of that.
And Representative Greiling, thank you for leading that as discussion rather than legislation.
Thank you.
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling, Armadiani, could you explain the school starts, Labor Day, pre-Labor Day school starts in the bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, the Labor Day start, which was taken out, I think, in this committee at one point, when we heard the policy bill, which had the mandate reduction section in it that was chaired by Representative Tilbury, then Representative Benson, which this has been an issue that he supports, amended it in our committee. So it's been in, out, and now it's in again, and it tends to be one of those ping-pong topics. And it's, I think the fever pitch of the Labor Day start issue is higher than probably it has been since it was actually put in by Governor Perfect, because he put it in a time of deficit when economies were bad, to give the resort industry a week or two extra of you know, more clients coming. And school districts, as you know, have always wanted this change, but the, as you know also, the other side is more emotional about this than usual because of the hard times that we're in. So I'm expecting, whether it's in this committee or another, this will come to another vote. And our committee's just kind of, you know, everybody knows the issue they're on a certain side, and we go with the flow based on whatever each committee decides on this issue.
Well, Representative Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, so Would you prefer to have the little battle here or the big war on the floor?
Representative Chair.
You can't see me through Representative Ethan. Of course, in my case, you can't see me through anybody, but...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Rucavina. My goal for the Labor Day start is that we don't talk about it, we just vote, everybody knows where they are. So I would prefer that we have, wherever we have it, I'm guessing it would be here rather than the floor. And I don't know how the vote goes in here, though, that we just plain focus on the good things in the bill and that issue where there's battle lines drawn. We just don't spend a lot of time on it. Cut to the chase and vote. And Mr. Representative Rucavina, then I would leave that up to you if you think you have the votes here or on the floor.
Representative Rucavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, how are you voting? Because we had the votes here, but I'm looking around the table and I think some of the members that voted are not here right now. So, Representative Garofalo's here. Yeah. What do you think, Pato? We got the votes? Okay.
I think there'll be a little more discussion if you're doing a count. we've got... Well, no, I guess you're the last one on the list. Maybe this is the end of the discussion, so if you're going to do something, you might be...
Mr. Chairman, I'll finish up on Representative Rucavina's comments. I've got a oral amendment on page 111.
I just happen to have my...
delete section 67.
And I thought there might be something coming.
Yeah. I would like to delete section 67. I don't... That's the Labor Day school start issue. We've talked about it and talked about it and talked about it. I think everybody's reasonably and fully informed.
I think that's the only reference in the bill to Labor Day starts.
Yes.
And then people are ready. Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Rucavina has the floor. Are you done? Representative House, did you want to make any comments about your amendment?
I would just appreciate your support.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand. Opposed? It's obvious the motion carried. The voices were a little louder than I had anticipated. That section is removed at this juncture. Any further discussion on the bill? If not, Representative Murphy, you have a motion. We're getting to the point again of doing some of our alignment issues.
Mr. Chair, I move that A43 amendment to amend portions of the Cultural and Outdoor Heritage Finance Omnibus Bill into House File 2.
Okay, the motion is before us, and I'm told that are there some changes that I don't know if Representative Murphy has them or not. Do you have those changes?
I have them. I page 176, line 14, insert. And I was...
Hey, Mr. Crowell, if you could just go to the table and explain it for everybody all at once, and then take Representative Murphy and incorporate.
It's fine with me, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And then you can just...
Mr. Crowell's seat better.
Okay. And then we'll just incorporate what your suggestions are into the Murphy Amendment.
Mr. Chair, Section 24 on lines 2.7 to 2.16 of the amendment duplicates what's already in the bill, and basically what we need to do is just roll the riders into the appropriation for the Department of Education. So 2.7 through 2.12 would be deleted. On 2.13 and 2.14, the letters would be G and H. And then on page 176 of the bill, then after line 14, we would insert the G and H. And then on page 175, lines 28 and 29, we would delete the $21,383,000 appropriation and insert $21,693,000 to incorporate the $310,000 on lines 210 and 11.
Okay, does everybody understand what Mr. Crow just indicated? Why don't you stay there for a moment, Mr. Crow, just in case there's a question about what we're incorporating here. Everybody have that? Looks like everybody does, and Representative Murphy, you're incorporating that into the amendment, I take it.
Sure.
Okay, so motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We now have then Representative Greiling's motion that the House file to the first committee on Grossman as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
No.
Motion carried. As I announced earlier, we'll now go to the higher ed workforce development bill.
Which one are we doing?
Higher ed.
And before Representative Ruth Cavina begins, after we've heard Representative Clark's bill, we'll be incorporating some of those accounts, and that will be done a little bit later.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So, Representative Ruth Cavina, if you could begin by making your division report motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Higher Education Workforce Development Finance Division report, House File 869 then.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion?
And Mr. Chair, I go to Ways and Means so, and be referred to Ways and Means.
That will be a later motion. Right now we're just adopting the report. So any discussion on the report? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. No. Motion carried. Representative Ruth Cavina, at this point is when you want to make the motion on
and then I'll move the House File 869, Mr. Chair, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and Representative Ruth Cavina, I understand you have an amendment. Do you want to take that up now? Or
yes, Mr. Chair, I'll take the A1 amendment up. And there are some technical parts of the amendment. There are also some, I had a provision in the bill that stopped the construction on the three of the biomedical buildings at the university that I had in the bill that the university didn't like, so I'm pulling that out. And there were some technical changes to Representative Clark's, one of her bills, and Representative Solberg's bill. And then I had to fix up for Minskew, because there was some hiring freezes in the bill that essential positions could be replaced. And that's kind of what the amendment does.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carried.
Mr. Chair, I did have another office amendment that it's the A2 amendment, and I don't know if it's in your packet that deals with the Board of Cosmetology and Barber's Board.
It has been distributed.
And it was requested for like special events that they be able to charge a permit. It's basically for like when a cosmetologist fixed his hair at a wedding at a hotel or whatever that they have to get a special permit for that, and then it does have a fee in there that goes into the general fund. But we don't have a fiscal note on it yet, so I don't know if you want me to offer it here or wait until Ways and Means or how you want me to approach that. Any money raised will go into the general fund.
I think you can offer the amendment here because it would not put you over your target. That would be the thing that would be bringing you, as Mr. Marks points out, it brings you under your target. So I think we're okay putting the amendment on here in that case.
It puts money, my understanding is it puts money into the general fund.
Yeah, and we'll track that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riccovina, can you just explain again the page 1, line 8, the special event permit, $75 per year. Is that a new fee? Is that a... so if somebody's going to... I want to make sure I understand what we're doing here. If somebody's going to...
What it is, my understanding, Representative Cole, Mr. Chair, is that if you look at Subdivision 1, if services are rendered at a place other than the licensed salon, they can... And it was explained to me, mostly for like weddings where the bride's contingent, you know, the bridesmaid and the whatever, they have their hair fixed, their nails done, etc. at the hotel they may be staying at where before the wedding. That's basically what this is for.
And
I won't fall on a sword for it. If you don't
Mr. Chair, Representative Riccovina, I understand we're collecting or creating a new fee, but for what purpose other than to further enrich the general fund? What's being done with it? What's happening with it?
That, I told you, I don't have a fiscal note on it yet, and that's why I asked. I think it's going in the general fund, although I know that the Board of Cosmetology does have, and it was in the governor's budget, a small increase in their fees in general, and it's in the bill. So what this is about and where all I know is it goes in the general fund, but I have no idea what it raises. I think it's a fairly insignificant amount of money.
Well, Mr. Chair, on behalf of my my cousin's fiance, who's getting married to my cousin, thank
your
Sarah.
Cousin's
for
marrying
thank
your cousin.
Thank,
I didn't understand.
No, my cousin. On behalf of my cousin's fiance, who is you know, kind enough to take my cousin off of his parents, you know, I appreciate her doing that, and I'm concerned that when my daughter, who is going to be the flower girl in the wedding, goes to have her hair done at the you know, prior. So, I don't know what this fee is for. I'm going to just urge members to vote no. Representative Riccovina, maybe we can clear this
up going forward. I'll tell you what. It's at the request of the board. I'll just not offer it here, and we'll offer it later. And I think, though, the problem with your cousin and your cousin is solved in Representative Con. I'm not sure.
I can promise you, Representative Riccovina, it's not a cousin marrying cousin. My cousin Dave is getting married to a wonderful young lady and who is of no blood relation whatsoever.
Okay. So I'll withdraw the two amendments then, Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Riccovina, I was just going to ask Representative Cole when the wedding was.
Mr. Chair, there's a fighting chance we're still going to be in session.
And your bill would kick in?
This, I would imagine, would be July 1 or August 1. I'm not
Mr. Chair, we're the wedding. No, the wedding's in September, Mr. Chair. I think there's a fighting chance we might still be in session.
Sure, I withdraw the amendment, and we'll get more information, and hopefully I'll have a note by then.
I was just trying to give him some comfort in case it came up later. I interpreted his comment when still in Philip. I'm optimistic that we'll get done. And maybe even get done today if the chair doesn't wander too much in the conversation. But the amendment is withdrawn. Representative Riccovina, why don't you present the bill, man, and then I think there is another amendment by Representative Hausman that will be...
Members, and I'll just work off of the spreadsheet. At the Office of Higher Education, I'm just about the same as the governor, a little more... I appropriate a little more money because I didn't cut the Office of Higher Education. Their appropriation isn't that big. And, you know, we do have, we think, a lot of unemployment and everything else, there's some increases in the state grant program, so I just left their budget alone. Now, the difference is in financial aid that between the governor's proposal and myself, you can see on lines 30 through basically 37. Members, I increased the four-year cap by $100, and that cost $2.2 million over the biennium. I reduced the student share by from 46% to 45%. That's about a $60 million item. Increased the living miscellaneous expenses by $700, and that cost $45.5 million. We went to another year on the state grant program from 4 to 5 years. That cost $16 million. And we did the power of you. The governor had eliminated it. We did $1,500 on line, $1.5 million on line 46 and expanded it to two suburban and rural campuses, and that was a $2.5 million expense. And then there was a veterinary loan forgiveness program at the university, Representative Otremba's bill for $225,000 a year, and Representative Bly's teach program at $600,000 a year are the only differences. In line 60 through 62, the governor had some small cuts to the learning network, Minitex, Library Services, MinLink. The committee didn't think we should be cutting those at this time, so we funded them as the base from last biennium. At the Mayo Foundation, the governor had some slight mix there, and we just left them alone. So there's a slight difference of approximately $200,000 there. At the Minnesota State College and University, just like Representative Dreiling, we were saved by the federal stimulus package and used the same numbers as the governor's. I had met with Governor Pawlenty, and he wanted some tuition caps, so we capped tuition at the university, MINSU system at 5%. The first year and 5% the second year, and directed them in the bill to buy down the increase to 2% and 2%. There's some central office reallocation cuts, and then reallocation of those base appropriations to the central office out to the campuses. We have a hiring freeze in the bill, and then kind of urge them to use some of the stimulus money to offer early retirements if they can to save money for what's going to happen in the next biennium, and we require them to give us a plan as to how they're going to prepare for the, you know, what's going to happen in the next biennium if things don't turn around, which I hope they do. At the University of Minnesota, I'm basically exactly the same as the governor again, although in the bill we direct the university to limit their tuition increase to no more than, they'll do the same thing as MINSU. They will increase tuition and then buy it back down with the stimulus dollars. They're buying it down to no more than $300 increase over the 2 years, $300 the first year, another $300 the second year with the stimulus money for Minnesota undergraduate residents. We direct them to create a middle income scholarship. You may remember that we had that language in the bill 2 years ago for the university, and they have a middle income scholarship for incomes up to $100,000 that gives buys down tuition for Minnesota residents there, because most of the state grant program gets cut off, in the $40,000 to $60,000 range, I'd say, but the federal money is in that, so this will help there. And then the only other probably interesting thing on the university side is the requirement in here at the stadium and other places that alcohol is served, but the university has a service to everybody or nobody. So, and that is the higher ed portion, Mr. Chair, under the deed. I basically do exactly what the governor asked. I think his cut in mine is, $620,000 difference. However, the controversial part of the deed bill is the increase in the workforce development fund fee. Commissioner McElroy in last year's bill had the authority to raise it to 0.12, which incidentally that the commissioner himself, when he was a state representative, had given that option to the commissioner of employment and economic development. I increased for this biennium the fee to 0.14, and then it goes back down to 0.12 in the next biennium. That raises, as you can see, the difference on line 68. You can see that there's a difference there. And I think the increase raises $38 million over the biennium, and I use that money to backfill cuts that the governor had made in a number of programs that you can see on page 5. The biggest one being a jobs program fashioned after the old Minnesota Employment and Emergency Employment Act back in the early 80s when we were in a financial crisis like we are currently, to the tune of $15 million. And then there are a number of other programs you can see there that were funded that will help create jobs or educate folks to get a job in this financial crisis. And at the Department of Labor and Industry, my numbers there are the same as the governor's, except I did keep the three positions that the prevailing wage division that had been funded with general fund dollars. We cut that general fund appropriation just as the governor did and replaced it with some workforce development shift that the governor had requested for an apprenticeship program. We gave him $200,000 for that apprenticeship program and then used the rest of his shift there as a new input of workforce development funds to keep those three positions. And we also kept two positions with special comp, workers' comp funds in the independent contractors. Inspectors that were going to have to be laid off because the money didn't come in for licensing last year like Commissioner Swigum had expected it to. And other than that, members, every other board that we have under our division is the same as the governor except for the Combative Sports Board, which was zeroed out by the governor, and we gave them $125,000 each year on line 203. And the only other, I guess, combative sports part of the bill is the splitting up of the Board of Cosmetology and Barbers board. Representative Gunther had combined that several years back, and he said it was a mistake, and we split the board in the bill. So that is basically the financial part of the bill, members, and I would stand for any questions.
I think we had one more amendment, and the author of the amendment wasn't present when we were on amendments. So
I think that's Representative Hausman's amendment, the A3 amendment.
Would you be ready to offer that now, Representative Hausman?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Or do you need a minute?
I'll just move the A3 and just tell you briefly. This is a center that used to be on the St. Paul campus and was very conveniently located there for the veterinary students who, even if they had an hour or so, could run over and spend some time treating these animals. You've seen this center in the news in the last few winters because there's a tundra swan. Once it was they didn't migrate in time, and the other time there was some, they thought to have some disease infecting them, but it's a center that has come to the rescue. It is still home to the veterinary students. They wanted to stay on campus. The dean at the time didn't agree to that. I think the current dean probably would have made a different decision, but they had to find a spot off campus, and it is still where vet students go, including a credit course in the summer. And this would be a one-time appropriation. If we can help them with this, the early construction costs that they dealt with, this is stimulus money, sorry. Stimulus money that can only, we can't add it to program. It's one-time money, and we thought this was an appropriate way to help with a one-time appropriation.
Representative Rukavina, advice?
Fine with me. It's going to help the end.
Okay, so.
And the veterinary student.
Representative Broad. The motion is before us, excuse me, and Representative Broad on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just coming from Facts Committee. Representative Rookavine, I'm just curious about the Combative Sports Commission and why those...
Representative Broad, if I might interrupt, we have an amendment dealing with the veterinary program at the U that's currently before us.
I'm sorry, Mr.
I think you'll want to hold your place.
Yeah, I was just responding to the overview that he gave.
Yeah, so we'll... keep you on the list. Representative Colt on the amendment?
No.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carried. Now we're back on the bill. Representative Rush.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry for being askew here.
Shuffle between committees, too, at times, so I understand.
Representative Rukavina, I'm trying to understand why the Combative Sports Commission needs general fund appropriations when they have a special revenue fund or a special fund through their fees, which is, I think, pretty commonplace. I look at the amount of money that could be used from the general fund for other programs. For example, the St. Paul Youth Program would be a $70,000. The Deaf and Hard of Hearing Program would be about $20,000. I'm just wondering if those might be, St. Paul Youth Program would be another $150,000. We could shift some of that money into those programs. I'm just curious about the priority and why those dollars stayed with Combative Sports versus those other programs in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the Deaf and Hard of Hearing.
Mr. Chair, members, we had a long discussion about this. The funding has kind of gone like this. And so there isn't another big event. They did have one big event, I think, last year that brought in some money. There aren't any big events. And so we thought we would help get them through. We think it's unwise to not have a board, basically, to regulate boxing and ultimate fighting and all the other things that they bring here, and so we're carrying them with that general fund appropriation. And I guess in response to your question about all the other programs, we did try to backfill all those programs, but we do direct the Department of Employment and Economic Development to use federal stimulus dollars to fill all those programs back to the level they were that you mentioned, and using the federal stimulus dollars. So I realize, you know, that it's probably a little controversial, but we also thought the committee, and we did have a discussion on this, Representative Murphy was very clear and to the point on it, that we just can't have, you know, those types of events going on in the state without some type of
just to follow up, I appreciate that, Representative Rukavina, but I do think that those events should be self-sustaining, and that they should be based on the folks who are participating in those events, and those dollars could be used to help fund those efforts in terms of the regulatory piece of the board or commission or whatever you want to call it. So I hope that you'll look at that piece. I certainly will be looking at that as this goes forward. It's not an opposition of regulation of that component, but it's a matter of it should be self-sustaining rather than using general fund dollars.
Mr. Chair, we will look at that. Representative Gunther was very adamant also in the committee on just funding this for the time being, and we are urging them, and we have them, to be self-sustaining. But as I said, their next big event isn't until, I believe, towards the end of next year, or we're not even sure if they do have a big event coming yet. And we did have some studies on this, and we tried to have some fees through you know, satellite broadcasting and everything else, and it didn't work out, so this is where we're at. So.
Representative Paul. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Representative Rukavina and I tend to agree with Representative Broad, and I think you do too, that this should be self-sustaining. You know, maybe as opposed to a general fund appropriation, we should consider having the board promote a cage match between Pawlenty and Pogamiller, and I bet they could collect plenty of revenue to help sustain themselves.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, ironically, in our caucus, we talked about one between me and Representative Kahn, since we're the same size. We thought that might even bring in more money.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, just a couple of questions. Representative Rukavina, I understand, if I'm understanding this correctly, the state grant program in your bill has a $16 million new appropriation to allow for a fifth year of eligibility. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair, Representative Cole.
Representative Rukavina, do you know if we took that $16 million and, for example, you know, just put it into the existing grant program, how many more students would we be able to serve with the grant program?
Well, I'm not sure if we could be able to serve any more. We probably could give the ones that are eligible a little more money, but I'd probably have to yield to Ms. Novak to answer that question, because, you know, as an example, I could, if you want to look on line 35, Representative Coles, when we lowered the student share from 46 to 45%, which is really appreciated, I think, by the private, the public, the students, everyone, it cost us up about $16 million. It's about the same as the 10-semester eligibility. So we could buy another point down, but I don't know if that brings any more people into the student grant, the grant program, the state grant program, because of the, you know, the income requirements and that and all, but maybe Ms. Novak can help me on that. But we just felt that it was wise to do this because of, you know, things have changed and who's going to school and, you know, what the length of time it takes to get a degree. And I really think it's a good proposal, and I've had nothing but compliments on it, Representative Cole. So, but I'll let Ms. Novak maybe clarify what I just said as far as more people being eligible.
Is that something that you'd be prepared to answer at this point, Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair and Representative Cole, Representative Rukavina has characterized it correctly. No additional students would become eligible if that was eliminated.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, your bill has lots in it, so I'm going to apologize for jumping off of higher ed, and I want to talk for just a minute about the Workforce Development Fund and the increase from 0.12% to 0.14%. Can you tell me how much? Can you remind me how much that's going to generate?
It's $35 million new dollars of on the spreadsheet here. Representative Mr. Berg says it's on 263 there. As you'll see, 35.3 million, and then when it drops in the next biennium, it goes at 2.12 again, where it was technically at now, although it wasn't exercised. at that amount, it drops to $19 million.
And Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, what exactly will that increased $35 million be used for in your bill?
There is the MEAD program, which is a state-subsidized job program that's similar to the one in the purpose years that was very successful, and we had testimony on that. There are some backfillings of the cuts to the different job programs, and if you can see on page 5 of the spreadsheet, programs like Northern Connections, I believe that was Representative Lanning's bill that the governor had cut out, Twin Cities Rise, which is a program that gets hard to employ folks that may have had been in trouble back to work. You can see a number of other programs like Ramsey County Building Lives Program at 150, and you know, so there's a number of programs there. Minneapolis Youth Program, the Boys and Girls Clubs have been cut out completely by the governor. We used $1 million there, so that's where most of it went. I believe that I used about $15 million. $15 million of the increase for those programs, and there were only a couple of actually new programs. One was for Representative Clark's bill, House File 2071, for Native Americans in the Twin Cities area. Another was Representative Hayden's for folks that are coming out of the Department of Corrections that really can't get a job very easily, and to get them, it's been a successful program. And the rest of the money goes to the dislocated worker program as it currently does. And Commissioner McElroy had the authority in law to raise that to 0.12, and he didn't. And they are projecting now, indeed, a deficit next year, I believe, of $4.4 million. They themselves are, and I think the commissioner knew that that fund was in trouble. They had spent all the carry forward last year because of the demand on the program, and there was very specific law last year in session law, or maybe it was 2 years ago, I'm not sure, it was 2007, that said if a crisis like this, Representative Coles, happened, that the commissioner had the authority, and it was permissive language, to increase it, and he didn't. And now they themselves are projecting a $4.4 million deficit by the end of the year, and with the demand on, by the end of the 2010, excuse me, fiscal year, and with the demand for services out there. In fact, on Minnesota Public Radio this morning, there was a lady saying that this program helped her get trained for a new job. She'd lost her job after 15 years. I'm looking for the, I don't know where it is. I normally have it in my pocket. If I don't have it in my pocket, I lose it.
Following your lead, Representative.
Yes, I know. So that's the reason why.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, just so I'm clear and members are clear, that $35 million is going to be an additional $35 million paid for by businesses here in Minnesota, correct?
That is correct.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, one more section of the bill I'd just like to ask a couple questions about, and that's Article 9, Section 3. Representative Rukavina, I understand that this provision relates to, I think it's three facilities up on up on the range, or in northern Minnesota at least. I guess I don't know if all three of them are on the range, but in northern Minnesota nonetheless, timber facilities, processing facilities. And I guess, Representative Rukavina, the question or concern that I have, and the question I want to ask is, what you're proposing to do here, Representative Rukavina, is to retroactively make requirements on companies doing business here in Minnesota that are going to make, you're basically tying up their facilities. I would argue that that this is a taking, and you're preventing them from
doing as they would choose to do with their facility, whether it's sell it to another another individual for another purpose, or sell off the assets within the facility, for example. It's my understanding, and I think Representative Solberg could probably correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there's one of these facilities in Grand Rapids, in the Economic Development Authority in Grand Rapids is trying to promote this facility for alternative uses, and this would prevent that from happening. I guess I'm curious as to why you think it's a good idea, a good state policy, to retroactively apply something like this to existing businesses.
Representative Coles, this was Representative Purcell's bill, and it's not the same language as his original bill, but it was fashioned after a bill that I had about 12, 14 years ago for mining facilities, which successfully kept those plants in an operating condition, and we were able to start up two taconite plants that would have probably otherwise been permanently closed if they hadn't been at least maintained somewhat. And that's what Representative Purcell was trying to do also. These plants are located in his district in Bemidji. One is in Representative Solberg's district, and one actually is right on the district line in my district, although Representative Bill claims it, but it's in my district. But most of the people working there live in the Cook area and Orr area in his district. So that's what was the rationale behind it. That program, Representative Coles, has never been challenged. And, in fact, the one plant is still been maintained in the LTD area in this plant. Governor Carlson signed that bill into law upon the recommendation of former taxpayer Abrams because he thought it was a good idea. So we just, Representative Purcell, kind of mimicked what that legislation said. And then the fact that that there was some tax obligations or whatever that it was changed to is the current change in that language. But if once they close, they probably won't be opened, and that was the idea behind it. And I think, Mr. Chair, and Representative Coles, bringing up what you did, if we, as soon as it's sold, then that new owner would have the ability to do what they want, to fix it up, to do something else. But if that isn't clear in the language, then we can fix that up as it moves along. And I'd be happy to work with you on that, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this further. I got to be honest, Representative Rukavina, I don't know a lot about the mining provision that you passed a few years ago. I do know that it exists, first of all. The difference, as I understand it, between that and this is that what you passed, I believe, I could be mistaken, you would know better than I, what you passed was prospective, not retroactive. That's a concern I have, not only for this provision, but for the precedent that we're setting for all businesses across the state of Minnesota. The legislature can come in and say 2 months, 6 months, 8 months, 12 months, after something has happened, you've got to hold on to what you have and keep it the way it is. And Representative Rukavina, if I understand your language correctly, for example, if one of those plants, if there was a buyer for one of those plants and they wanted to use the facility and put people to work in a way other than the current use of the facility, they'd be prohibited from doing that for the 2 year period, and that to me is concerning. I don't think that we should be that restrictive. I appreciate your efforts to try to protect and preserve jobs in northern Minnesota, and I know you care passionately about that, not just for your, and I agree with you on that. But I think we need to be really careful about what kind of messages this legislature continues to send to businesses with regard to how we're going to come in and after the fact change the rules of the game. That to me is very concerning.
Mr. Chair, I'll work with you on that, Representative Colson. I think what we're trying, what we have done is that being that it's a natural resource where a lot of the resource is owned by the state of Minnesota, whether it's the timber resource or the mining, the minerals resource, that's what our the reason we put it in statute like that, but you may be correct on the new language isn't as good as the old language was, but you know, that was a request by a senator, and they always think they're smarter than us, but most of the time they're not.
Representative Rossavina, don't ever be fooled.
Thank you. We have several people on the request, but Representative Solberg, are you on this point? Some people are raising their hand more than once, and with, just so you know who's on the list of this at this point, is Champion, Howes, Gitzmeyer, Winkler, and Rutt. So we'll go in that order. Yours is on that issue?
One of my questions is on that issue.
Representative Champion also has yours on that issue as well?
No, it's actually on the Metro Economic Development.
Okay, why don't we dispose of this issue then, and then we'll...
And Mr. Chairman, echo the concerns, but Representative Rossavina, my concern over what the language does is even a little bit I guess I have a little twist than Representative Coles, is that I think you're going to, with the language that you have here, you're going to actually do the exact opposite effect of what I believe you're trying to do. I think this language will actually make it more difficult to get jobs in those facilities. It will make it more difficult to get the sale to occur, because you're essentially going to be creating a cloud on the title, and you're essentially going to be impacting the sale price for those facilities. And so I really would encourage you to be very careful with that language, and I'm concerned that you're going to force those facilities to be vacant longer than they really need to be or should be.
I will heed that warning. That's
good. By the way, we still have donuts, and I'm not sure how warm the coffee would be, but my thought was that why don't we kind of have a last call on the donuts, and I'm going to request that maybe they go down to the page room if they're... I know there's going to be some left, but if you haven't had one...
Are you expecting us still to take the lunch, John?
Well, we've got, in addition to yours, we've got a couple of other bills, Representative Rukavina. But so far, yours has been the longest of the two. We have Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, I definitely admire what you're trying to do in this bill, and particularly I admire you, you know, having put forth some revenue, for lack of a better word, for community businesses. A line item that seems to concern me probably more than any right now, and I must admit that I will, you know, dig a little deeper into this bill as well, is on page 4 on line 12, which is the Metropolitan Economic Development Association. And in the bill on page 44, you talk about this is a grant to that particular organization to continue minority business development programs, and needless to say, I'm definitely for developing minority business. But I also recognize that at this day and time, when there is an economic crisis and businesses are challenged, that we need to have opportunities for minority-owned businesses to really develop the infrastructure without it being cost prohibitive. The organization that you have listed here appears to be receiving a grant that would help with their annual budget of something around $2.3 million, and yet they have no scholarships available for individuals who come through the door who really need the support of the organization. So I would like to know what your thinking was around that, and why we would potentially be providing a block grant to an organization that doesn't quite carry out the mission that we all would like for it to carry out when it comes to really helping struggling minority-owned businesses.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Champion, the governor had reduced that NIDA appropriation, and I restore it to its base down on line 20, if you see there. And I think they've done some good work, and there wasn't any request that I can remember for any kind of scholarship program for them, so... maybe Representative Clark can help me out on this. Representative Clark had asked me to help them and restore their money, and I did, and I don't know of the scholarship program.
Well, if I might, Mr. Chair, just frame it so that Representative Clark can speak to this question. Perhaps, you know, in my trying to be careful with my wording, I want to really make sure that what is my major concern is addressed. there may not have been a request from Representative Clark or the others for there to be scholarships. There is a necessity for the organization to understand the needs of the demographic and to respond so that they are being responsive and helpful in real time. And when you look at Women's Vincent, for an example, what they do is that they have services available for a fee, and if there are people who can't pay the fee, then they have scholarships available within their internal structure. For MEDA, as this organization is so affectionately known as, there is no such structure. And therefore, if a business comes to MEDA and they cannot pay a fee, then they receive no service and there's no opportunity for help. And how I know this is because I work with minority-owned businesses and I work closely with this organization. So if there are public funds that's going forward, I'm a little concerned, especially if it's a fee-based organization and there's no other opportunities for minority-owned businesses to really receive the services from this body. And as I mentioned, I've done work with this organization, so I would love to hear what Representative Clark is going to say around this, because I can bring the folks in, you know, to speak to this question.
Representative Clark.
Well, thank you. Representative Chapman, I guess I could bring in the folks. In fact, we had two or three people who testified that day, and they did talk about the fact that they do serve people even when they don't have the resources. So maybe this is something we could talk about outside of this committee. I'm not aware of the problem you're describing, because actually there was a whole discussion about several folks who had been served no matter what. And there's not enough money for any of our low-income minority businesses to be doing this kind of work. We know that. And I think...
Mr. Clark, could you move the mic just a little closer?
Did you hear anything, I think?
I could hear it, okay. But I had to look at
the camera. I was just going to say, the people who testified on this bill, several people from the community and the director, indicated that there are services available for folks who don't have the fees that they serve everybody. There may be something that I don't know that you could tell me more about. We could talk about this more later outside of this committee if you want, but I have great respect for the organization, and my understanding is that they serve across the board all kinds of people and have quite a strong history of that. And that my other point was just that there's not enough money for any of our low-income minority-serving and indigenous-serving organizations. I know that, and so maybe we need to work together to figure out some more ways to make that possible.
And Representative Clark?
Representative Champion.
I would love to work with you around this question, as I agree that there's not enough money, and we want to make sure that the money gets to the places or spaces that it should in order for our total Minnesota economy and businesses within our state really receive the support that they really need in order to be productive. And so I'm just really concerned about this line item, and I'm definitely supportive of talking with you about that.
Okay.
And hope that we can do something about this.
Representative House. Representative House, you are next.
Mr. Representative Rukavina, I know you put the barbers and the cosmetologists back the way they were a few years ago, but I'm looking at your spreadsheet and the money, and I'm not... If you could just tell me of the $839,000 you have here, how is that split between those boards? It doesn't really show in this spreadsheet.
The Mr. Chair, the Commissioner, in the language in the bill, the Commissioner of Finance is going to determine what came in on the barber side and the cosmetology side of split money.
Representative Kiffer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am looking at the summary here, and I'm trying to find the place in the actual bill that talks about forgiving the city of St. Paul a portion of its debt. That would not start until 2014, but adds up to about $32 million, so that's a huge tail going forward, but I currently cannot find it in the bill. Maybe somebody can, Representative Rukavina, can inform me of to where that is.
Ms. Novak, I think, can help us in that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer. If you look on page 57 of the bill, I've just been informed that is where it is. It begins on line 57.24. This was Representative Mahoney's bill. This has been in the some form or another in the last biennium. Also, I believe it was in the final bill in the last 2 years and was vetoed by the governor. The proposal is somewhat different this year for a practice arena for the Wild across the street, and it doesn't, there's four more payments before they expire in, I believe in 2014. Yeah, 2014 will be the first year they don't pay. And, well, that's what it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious as to what the justification was for giving this kind of a loan. It was already interest-free.
Chair, Representative Kip Meyer, St. Paul and the mayor came in and they talked about the fact that there were a lot of places all over the state that had arenas built with state bonding and that they had to pay theirs back. And they've made, I believe, I don't know, maybe Mr. Burke can help me on the total amount of payments they've made, but I think in the
6.2 of the loan.
Yeah.
Could you repeat that? We didn't hear what you said.
They've paid $15.2 million of the loan back, and then they paid interest too, I imagine, but I'm...
No, not interest, but the loan is part of the
construction. Okay. Representative Haymar is familiar with the...
Representative Haymar can help me out. It was Representative Mahoney's bill, and...
Mr. Chair, just to be clear, Representative Kiffmeyer, this has been a controversial issue for a long time, and I was a freshman and when this when the deal was put together for the XL Center, then Mayor Norm Coleman and the governor and the Senate and the House were trying to figure this whole thing out. Originally, it was a grant to the city of St. Paul to construct the center. And then in the last minute negotiations, it ended up being a loan. And ever since then, we've been trying to figure out a way to rectify what was the original intent, I believe, of all the players. And the city of St. Paul has paid $15 million, as was stated, toward retiring the $48 million loan. And we realize that the state is in really no position to be doing this in this biennium or maybe the next biennium. So that's why the language is such that the loan won't be forgiven for 4 years. The city will continue to make payments. This area, you know, if you've been to downtown St. Paul recently, I went to the college hockey tournaments or the high school tournaments. This is the event center. It's transformed our capital city with the Ordway, the Science Museum, the XL. This money is all going to be plowed into economic development across the street from the XL Center. So I understand the concerns about it, but I think the city has done a really good job and has a convincing message here that this is going to be a good economic development for the city. A loan that probably should never have been made. If you look at the Minneapolis Convention Center, the center up in Duluth, these are all grants or bonding proposals. They were not loans. And why St. Paul ended up getting singled out has been problematic to our community for a long time. So I'm hoping that this language can survive and that in 4 years the economy turns around and this will be seen as a good investment for the city to forgive this loan.
President Tamar, you dated both of us when you said that was your first term. I was on that conference committee when we originally worked that whole issue out. And by the way, we did try to address it in 1812 last spring, so we did have agreements between the House and Senate at that point in time. Representative Kiffmeyer, any further questions?
No, but Mr. Chairman, I think my concern wasn't vested so much in my concern about the validity and the goodness of those situations, or even maybe in this situation, because I'm aware of those other kinds of terms, but I think it was two things, wanting to be sure that in a very difficult fiscal time that we are prudent in what we do, and then pushing it out to 2014 just had a little bit of a concern that we have these tails, commitments later on that sometimes come back to get us. So those are the two concerns, but you know, that is, I certainly do understand, and I think it has been a very useful entity to St. Paul. Thank you.
Representative Winkler. you've had your hand up long ago, but you're still on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina, I think I'm the only, except with the exception of the committee administrator, person here from the Bioscience Division. And so I want to first just comment that one thing that we have discovered in that division is that there really is no effective or comprehensive economic development plan for the state that DEED has put forward. In fact, probably the governor's signature budget item for economic development, the reduction in the corporate tax rate, was not a product of DEED. It was a product of the tax commission. And really, DEED has not played any significant role in proposing any kind of visionary economic development plan. Even the fact that Minnesota's economy structurally slipped behind the nation in 2006 is a question about why, the question of why that has happened is not one that they can effectively answer, and there may be good reasons for that. So the wind-up is that we do have one organization, the Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota, that actually has a comprehensive statewide plan for a very crucial industry. And unfortunately, in your bill, while you do some, I think, positive things for in economic development, like the Bioscience Buildings, Elk Run, and Enterprise Minnesota, I'm afraid that the $200,000 appropriation for the Biobusiness Alliance will put it out of business. And at the same time, I see a number of appropriations in the bill for, especially in the workforce programs, the youth employment programs, that really didn't, I would say, pass muster in the Bioscience Division as effective economic development or workforce programs. And so my concern is that we are hurting the one organization that really is a leader in this area at the expense of others that are not do not really meet the test of research. And I think you probably know that there are a lot of people in the field who are concerned about this. And I just think I should express that and hope that we can maybe do something about that at some point in this process here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
I agree with everything Representative Winkler said. But when you don't have money, you don't have money, Representative Winkler. The $100,000 will keep the Bioscience Alliance going and together. We do have language on page 90 to try to get a economic development strategy working group, which Representative Mahoney asked for based on Representative Beer's bill, and try to put something together to address what you're talking about.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I'm glad that you agree, although I guess my point of difference would be that there are a number of areas where new initiatives are funded, and I guess I'm just not sure that the way those are funded represents the priorities of the Bioscience Division of the committee.
Representative Rush. On that point, you've got a new issue. On that point, then, Representative.
Mr. Chairman, just to say, the youth programs and others that are funded are absolutely necessary to get these kids into the whole workforce stream. And so I can't agree with you that there's some sort of loss here. This is a really good investment in these young people. So we need biomedical plans. We've got some investment that they were protecting, but we shouldn't be cutting our youth that help get them into the whole workforce at the same time. So I think that I really want to thank Representative Rukavina for making sure that we eliminate those cuts that the governor made and put some dollars back into those folks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Parks, there's no disagreement on the intent. I think that the thing that we found somewhat lacking was solid support of their effectiveness for the dollars that they spend compared to some of the other things that we did find to be very effective.
Representative Rush.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm looking at the IEEE section and page 175 in the Taconite Area Environmental Protection Fund. Representative Rukavina, I'm just trying to understand the change between a majority to at least seven IEEE members. What type of change does that make?
Mr. Chair, the delegation felt that four people shouldn't be able to spend money. In many places, it takes eight people to spend Taconite tax dollars that go to the IEEE, and there were many other places where that wasn't addressed. And so we just tried to change everything to a majority, seven members of the board, which is the 13-member board. And so that's what it does.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Rukavina, on page 176, I'm trying to understand how this money actually works. and whether these projects are actually bid. I mean, there's a list starting on page 176.16 that goes down to 177.29 that says that these projects, certain projects, shall be funded at 0.4651 cents per ton or 1.1628 cents per ton. And I'm wondering, is that a number that is the cost of the project? Is it just a number that kind of sounds good? Where do those numbers come from? Are the projects bid, and why are they in statute?
Mr. Chair, the range delegation got together. This is a fund that up to 50% of that fund has to be used for public works projects. That's what these are, but sometimes we have meetings upon meetings upon meetings, and that, so these projects were requested by these communities, and legislators in those districts wanted them, and the hope here is that because of the situation on the Iron Range with let's see, one of our mines completely closed, and all of our mines either scheduled to shut down this summer or be on halftime, that we would want some economic development immediately. So I think in the bill, these are required to be out by July 1st, June 30th, the project, the effective basis. Or, excuse me, after signing the bills, we're hoping to get them going right away so that we could have something going on up there when everybody's laid off. And Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, these represent the cents per ton is the way it's normally done, and one cent is about $400,000. So I think the total here is about, is less than the 50% that's the current law of the funding going to public work. But we just wanted to get them out right away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rosadina, I guess my concern is the earmarking nature of the meddling of the legislature in the IRRRB. I seem to recall a number of debates a while ago in which we were advised not to meddle in the work of the IRRRB from a legislative standpoint, and this is pretty significant direction and essentially superseding of the IRRRB in terms of where the money is spent. I would think that the IRRRB would want to expend the money and get the projects going just like you would. I guess I have some concerns over the earmarking of these projects in this bill when you've already raised the standard of the IRRRB to get the projects spent. It seems like they should or would want to have the same effort that you're hoping for in terms of economic development on the range.
Representative Rosadina, any further comment? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just Representative Rukavina, I always get concerned when a Rukavina bill has elections provisions in it. Can you just kind of walk through Article 2, Sections 33, 34, 35, and 36 at a high-level view and just make sure there's nothing here that's going to freak me out?
Well, it's not intending to freak you out even more, but this is Representative Kahn's language.
And I have all the information I need.
And it's dealing with voter, you know, voting at the campuses and students being able to vote, you know, being able to be assured that they can vote and getting pre-registered and that type of information. So that's why it was in here. I wish she put it in her bill. Maybe we can move it.
Representative Grapple. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, you want me to do that? I'm not kidding. I'm serious.
Well, she isn't here, so. Mr. Chair, at the end of the presentation here, I'm going to move this article and all the workforce into, make a motion to move it into another bill so it lines up with Representative Murphy's bill and Representative Clark's bill. And so maybe at that point you could do
okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Grapple and Representative Rubin, I don't recall seeing election provisions in a higher education workforce development bill before. I could be mistaken, but I don't remember that.
Well, I believe, Mr. Chairman, this is also maybe I'm wrong. I wish Representative Thon were here, but that it is in her bill. But Representative Thon, being the good legislator that she is, makes sure she has all of her bases covered.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, and Mr. Raffel, you know, given the precinct there and the missing ballots, it's a highly sensitive nature. So I don't serve on the committees, but it sounds like you're willing to address that. But thanks. On page 21, section 4. I'm just wondering if this prohibition or requirement of American-made clothing, you know, the Congress just passed a stimulus package where we sent billions of U.S. tax dollars to places like Puerto Rico, but now you're going to prohibit people from Puerto Rico from being able to develop clothes here. You want to...
Puerto Rico, I think, would be calling. I think this would include Puerto Rico on
American clothing. Territory.
Puerto Rican made clothing.
So
I've got another provision hidden in here that allows Croatia too, but you haven't found that yet.
Territory is considered part of the United States.
I believe it.
I'm a former geography and history teacher. Puerto Rico is a territory of the United States. In fact, there have been times when it's been talked of as being the 51st state, and the last time I read an article on it, the citizens of Puerto Rico, one-third of them wanted to be the 51st state, one-third of them were happy the way it was, and the other one-third were undecided. When you're born in Puerto Rico, you are a United States citizen.
Mr. Chair, which kind of proves the point that young kids nowadays don't know the geography.
Being that I at one time did teach geography, that may be a slap at me as well.
But you did a good job, Mr. Chair. It's since your retirement this has started happening.
That's right. Spending too much time studying technology stuff, I guess, Representative Rukavina. Thanks. And I know this is it's kind of a humorous provision. You kind of glossed over it, but I'm serious about this. On page 39, the language regarding liquor sales in the stadium, I really hope that as this process goes on, you retain that language and you fight for that. Because that, I don't understand why the Grey Poupon crowd gets to, you know, have a drink at a game, and if I go there with my dad, him and I aren't allowed to do that, especially since as taxpayers, and I voted for it, but we're providing part of the funding, and I would really hope that you fight to make sure that provision's in there. I don't understand any policy or security issues for explaining why the people up in the suites overseeing the feudal kingdom are able to drink and we're not allowed to. So I really hope you keep that in there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raffel, I feel the same way as you. I thought it was rather elitist. The taxpayers did pay a significant amount of the funding for that, if not most of it. And I don't know of any problems that were ever had at the Metrodome. So I think rather than them bringing and drinking prior to the game or whatever, that it could be controlled by this.
I appreciate the geography lesson, Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then we'll begin to take up a series of motions for the alignment that you referred to earlier. So, Representative Rukavina, I think you have the motion before you.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd move to delete Article 3, C-10 from House File 869. And as I mentioned, the reason why is that Representative Clark's bill and Murphy's bill have to fit in with this bill to align with the conference committee that we're going to be going to.
The motion is before us. Any discussion? When I mentioned realignment, they'll be amended actually this morning into a different bill. So the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Rukavina, then you have your final motion. Representative Rukavina renews his motion that House File 869, the First Committee of Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
That brings us to House File 2150 by Representative Clark. And as Representative Clark comes forward, members, we will be dealing with the presentation of Representative Clark's bill now. If there are any amendments, we will be taking those amendments up. And then in the end, we will be laying the bill over for purposes of amending. I think this all goes on to the Health and Human Services bill, if I recall correctly. Is that, or no? Oh, that's right. Half of it goes to Representative Rukavina's bill, and the other half goes to Health and Human Services. So, Representative Clark, if you could move the division report.
I'd first move the Housing Policy and Finance, Public Health Finance Division report for House File 2150, the first committee endorsement.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion is carried.
Chairman, I move House File 2150, the first committee endorsement.
Okay, that motion is before us. And I think you have an amendment, Representative Clark.
I do, Mr. Chairman. I have an author's amendment, the A53 amendment. I'd like to move the A53 amendment.
Okay, the amendment is before us. Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, do you want me to briefly explain it?
Yeah, why don't you just briefly go over it?
Sure. We needed to make a number of changes in the bill. We basically took out several portions of the bill. The first one is the page 16 to 21, which was Representative Canoe's bill on toxic feed kids. We took that out of this bill because that language is now in the environment bill, as well as the funding. The next part was changing the effective date, line 1.5, for newborn screening for deaf children. That was a request from the department. The next one, lines 1.6, deleting section 20. That was the Dabney bill that dealt with lowering the blood level guidelines. The cost to that was not something we could bear in this bill. We found out just recently that we had a $500,000 error in our calculations, and so we needed to remove a couple things. This is one of them. The other one was the Tiffin bill that dealt with youth violence prevention. That's section 44. That's removed. Both of those had fiscal notes that came very late, and although we really liked those bills, we did not have the money to pay for them. And section 55 and 56 was are more of the same from the Dabney Canoe bill. And the last part, which is modifying from 1.1 to 1.22, support services for families with children who are deaf or have hearing loss. This is a correction in the rider. The Minnesota Department of Health let us know that they overestimated their administrative costs, so more of the costs can go actually into the program. And that's the amendment.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. About 2-1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll run through the bill, taking some of the highlights.
You were the other vote. Okay, very good. Have members pay attention is what the message there is. Representative Clark, on the bill, as amended.
Okay, I'll run through and hit some of the highlights and basically start with a little bit of an overview here that what the bill does in the current economic crisis is to preserve our investments in housing and to minimize the impact of the cuts to public health and human services programs that are in this bill and in this committee's jurisdiction. I'll just mention housing first. Since housing has been one of the big problems in terms of the economic problem, we've really tried to work with that sector in this bill. There's some federal stimulus dollars coming in, so we were able to put those in certain places, and in other places we weren't. Just to remind you, foreclosures in Minnesota increased by 71% from 2005 to 2006 and by 72% from 2006 to 2007, another 29% in 2007 to 2008. There's a committee that of advocates and others that met for most of the last year to talk about what we might do in the legislature with these issues. One of the things to keep in mind is that those losses, foreclosures, and so on also result in the residential construction industry loss of more than 16,000 jobs. So, despite that, the committee wanted to hold the line on the appropriations to affordable housing funds, and because we recognize that they are such an important and vital part of our economic recovery. So we've maintained the base funding for almost all the housing-related programs. The challenge program by the governor had been reduced almost $8.5 million. We still end up reducing it $1.5 million, but that's nothing like what had been cut from the governor's proposal. One of the reasons, of course, for preserving that is to understand that for every $1 million invested in that challenge fund, about 47 housing development jobs are created. Hear me saying that, Mr. Chairman, because some of the cuts are very painful, but this is one of the things we kept in mind. In support of housing services, this bill also appropriates $3 million in 2010-11 for the support of housing services. Now, this is fund the services, the governor's priority for long-term homelessness. He's been very good at helping us build the buildings so that we need to provide the supportive services to the people who are in them. And so we restored the funding that was needed there, a $3 million fund for that over the 2 years. The governor had not provided any funding for that in his program, his budget. Runaway and homeless youth is an aching problem that this committee has been dealing with for a few years. Thank goodness there are some federal dollars coming in from the federal stimulus program. We figured out which parts were not being funded by the federal stimulus and added $238,000 for programs for homeless and runaway youth. Just to let you know, tonight there's probably 740 young people living in cars or out on the street. So we made a stab at that. It's not enough, but it's more than was there. The bill has a number of other initiatives, housing for high-risk youth. This is a one-time demonstration grant for housing for high-risk adults coming out of prison, and one of the biggest problems for them is getting housing, and so we have a $500,000 appropriation here for a pilot project. It has parts in other communities. We're just dealing with the housing part. Over in the area of health, the governor did an overall reduction to the health department of 7.9%. We made a little bit more of a reduction, except in certain areas. The governor made his cut, he cut family planning by 25%. We did not carry that cut through. Most of our cuts are reductions, are delays, and rather than actual cuts. One of the payments just, for example, is for the local public health clinics. We made their payments quarterly delayed the final payment until 2010. And that is in line with the governor's recommendation for shifting, so we agreed on that. They were happy not to be cut more from what they tell us. This is just a shift. The MDH, Department of Health grant cuts, we do cut their grants equally across the board by 2.55% in fiscal year 10-11 and 5.5% in 12-13. The governor, as I mentioned, had only recommended 3.5% cuts to family planning. This bill does adopt all of the governor's recommended for fee increases in the health department special revenue fund to cover the cost of the various inspections and services performed by the department. I'll just mention some of the areas where the governor recommended increased fees for licensing activities, well management x-ray equipment, lead abatement program, pool inspections, manufactured home park licensing, food manufacturer certification, food, beverage, and lodging licenses, healthcare facilities, licenses, and health laboratory certification. This bill also creates a new fee and licensing structure for youth camp programs and environmental laboratory accreditation program, which the governor recommended. The only other fee that was brought to us was a $4 fee for newborn screening for hard of hearing, and this was agreed upon by all who were working on that issue. It's a very, very effective program and a small increase, $4 per newborn. We tried to reach out and do some important work with the dollars we had. For example, one of the important ones, small but hopefully will make a difference, is rural pharmacy grants. We appropriated $100,000 in one-time grants to the Rural Pharmacy Planning and Transition Grants Program. This is to help preserve access to pharmacy services in rural areas. We learned that this is really a big problem out there.
Another place, for example, where that might go would be Kef Lake, where they had a telepharmacy project that needed $10,000, and Leech Lake, where they had no pharmacy services. There's also a grant to Hennepin County Medical Center to expand their cancer registry, $100,000. There's a colorectal cancer grant that will provide for colorectal screening at two different facilities. This is one of the most effective cancer prevention strategies there is. If we can discover colorectal cancer early, it can be cured by removing the cancer. And it's saving one person from extensive cancer surgery pays for the investment that we're making here, $100,000. Another one was that we did was Representative Constell, the Women's Heart Health, the number one cause of women's death in Minnesota, investing in some prevention work there. Also mentioned in the human services area, which we cover in this committee, the certain areas, one is the community action grants. We make a one-time cut of $3.4 million to the community action grants, and that replaced the federal stimulus funds. So we were able to do that. The food shelves, we make a one-time appropriation of $275,000 in fiscal year 2010. And I might just note that probably what everybody would assume has probably heard from constituents. We have more hunger in Minnesota than we've ever had, including our suburbs and urban and rural Minnesota. And so this does help them with an increase of up to, with an increase. Mr. Chairman, there's lots of details to this, so I'll be glad to talk about more if you need to know. Just overall, the Housing Finance Agency, our change there was less than 1%, 0.55%, $90 million, bottom line. In Human Services, it was $30 million, no change from the governor. And in the Health Department, it was $115 million, a deeper cut than the governor, by about 1.5%. Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. By the way, then, members, just a reminder, this is a bill that will be laid over, and then there will be a series of motions, as I mentioned before earlier, a lot of people were coming and going, that will begin the aligning of these bills with the Senate. Are there questions on the bill? Well, seeing none, then... Oh, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It's okay to ignore me because I didn't know that Puerto Rico was part of the United States. All right.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, do we have a number for the total of non-tax revenue changes that are a part of this? And if so, what is that amount? Or if it's, I'm not able to locate on that on the spreadsheet. Or for House staff.
You're talking about the fee changes?
Yeah, I'm looking for
fee
a...
increases.
Well, I'm hesitant to say fee because maybe there's a new... revenue enhancement mechanism called something other than a fee, so I want to make sure I'm open up enough that it's non-tax revenue changes. That's the term I'm using to make sure that I get an accurate number. What is the total amount of non-tax revenue changes that would be carried in this?
I'll ask the chef to give you
the
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, there were a few things, and on one of the spreadsheets there's a revenue adjustment that has a few of those things listed. For the fee revenue changes that were done in the Department of Health, that amounted, there were about 10 fee changes in total, and that amounted to just over $4.4 million for the biennium, the 2010 and 11 biennium. And then for the health board, there were two boards that requested a fee increase, and the revenue from those increases for the biennium would be about $372,000.
Does that help? Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman and the House staff. So outside of those non-tax revenue changes, no other items in the bill?
Well, no.
I serve as Representative Clark on the Jobs and Economic Opportunity Policy and Finance Committee, so I know that she is a smart legislator. That's why I'm looking here. I'm looking for something. I just can't find it. I know it's there somewhere.
Sure, Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, there were transfers from other funds, which I think we covered. But it was a transfer from the fund balance that the state is in the state government special revenue fund for the health related boards, and that transfer is $10 million in fiscal year 2012. Mm-hmm. And then there was also a transfer from the Cooper Sams Longevity Awards Fund, that's housed in the Emergency Medical Services Board unit, and that amount is $626,000 in fiscal year 2010.
Okay. So just Mr. Chairman and staff, just totaling these numbers up here, it looks like we're looking at about roughly $16 million in non-tax revenue changes. Is that accurate?
No. Okay. Mr. Sheriff, I may, and Representative Raffel, there's one more piece. The Federal Fiscal Stabilization Fund, the committee was given $5 million of those funds to spend in fiscal year 2010.
Okay. So.
And I think that's it.
Okay, so $21 million for the 10 and 11 biennium and non-tax revenue changes for this finance bill?
That's exactly right. We're transferring over dollars. They're not new, necessarily new dollars. We're transferring over shifting dollars. Is that what you're talking about?
No. I mean, Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark.
Except for the fees. The governor's recommended fees are new. And what we heard from the Department of Health, it's like 22 positions that represents.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, what I'm concerned, and I'm making sure I'm not... This has been done in the past, is that members have mistakenly thought that general fund targets represented spending, and that's not an accurate number, that when we have non-tax revenue changes, it actually lowers the general fund spending amount, even though we're supplying more revenue for spending. So that's what I'm trying to keep an eye on and know what the real number is. And I don't mean that as being disparaging towards you. It's when we were in charge, we used the same general fund targets. So non-tax revenue changes, so new revenue above forecast for this bill, is $21 million.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Grasso, the $10 million is in 2012, so over both biennium, but the $10 million is in the second biennium.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
And
Chairman.
That's special revenue. That's not general revenue fund.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, the point I'm trying to make is that I'm trying to look at an aggregate level, you know. We don't have, you know, I understand for accounting purposes why we have a general fund and special fund. I'm looking at all funds total. Okay. You know, what are the non-tax revenue changes? And that's what I was kind of looking for. I know it's probably a question that's better put outside of committee, and maybe I should just request them in advance. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, I thought that $10 million was a fund transfer.
It's not new.
The $10 million is not new revenue, but fund transfer.
That's correct. I'm just trying to say that existing revenue, we're just transferring it for different use.
Okay.
And maybe that's what you want. I'm not sure.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm grateful. Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I know there's different funds, but if we have a pot of money that is like the airport fund last year, and we take that money out and we use it and spend it for another purposes, for purposes of our spreadsheets, that is new revenue, even though it's a pot of money sitting there, even though it may be intended for other purposes, it is revenue above the... That's where I was going, so thank you.
Any further discussion on the bill? Well, seeing none, then the bill is laid over. We were about to take up a series of motions, but I see... there's Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy, are you...
Mr. Chairman, I think I have a motion here too to amend Article 1 from this committee to.
We're going to take a series of motions now by Representative Murphy. Your bill is now laid over, and this is the alignment things that we're doing. And by way of announcement, so Representative Rukavina is here. We've had a little discussion while you're gone, and we're going to be shortly. There will be a motion by Representative Kahn once we're done with this one to reconsider your bill and to take up that election provision, and she agreed to an amendment that she'll make on the elections part of it. If that's okay with you, it appeared from your discussion that you were open to that. But we'll take care of this series of motions first. Then, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 1169 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, that motion is before us. Yeah, this is the vehicle bill. Joanna just wanted to make sure I announced that. Yeah, then we need the second motion now, Representative Murphy, to that motion is before us, so Representative Murphy.
I move to amend Articles 3 to 10 from House File 869, the first committee engrossment in the House, into House File 1169, and to amend the title accordingly.
Okay, that's the section we just removed. Now we're putting it back in this bill. So, any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, I move the A13 amendment to amend portions of the Cultural and Outdoor Heritage Finance Omnibus Bill into House File 1169.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now we get to a motion by Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Clark.
So I'll move to amend Article 1 and Article 5 from the Housing Policy and Finance and Public Health Finance Omnibus Bill into House File 1169.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Now we revert back to the original motion by Representative Murphy that House File 1169 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Are we ready for the... Okay. That's, you want to distribute that and... Representative Kahn, if you want to make the motion to reconsider, or Representative Rufina back, I guess you could make that one.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to reconsider House File 869.
Okay, that motion is before us, and everybody should understand that that's the purpose of an amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The bill is now before us again, so we would be ready for an amendment at some time.
Mr. Chairman, I was sorry. I was looking for some information, so I wasn't here when the question was raised. This is the issue of the elections bill dealing with higher education institutions, which came from the Secretary of State's office and was worked on. And I frankly can't remember the discussion that put it into this bill. At one point we thought it was in both bills and moving along, but the decision has been made that it's more appropriate in the state government finance bill. So the motion I would like to make now is on page 20 to delete section 2, page 33 delete, I guess members have it in front of them.
Yes.
So I'd like to make that motion before them, and then at the next point we'll add it into the state government finance bill. When that bill is probably
before. And that'll be the next bill up. So,
okay.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Kahn, care to give me anything out of her bill? That might be a lot of fun. Like somebody can't have a car or something.
Domestic partners?
Well, I thought that perhaps you'd like to have some cash out of her bill. Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Rukavina, if you could renew the motion that your bill be recommended.
Then I'll amend it. I'll move, Mr. Chair, that also A69 as amended now be recommended to pass, and we refer to Ways and Means Committee.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Now we go down to the state government finance committee bill by Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment on this bill, too. And I have to leave for a brief time at 11:30.
So we better take your motion, your amendment, as soon as we get the bill before us. Representative Kahn is coming forward, so I'll recognize you right after we get the bill before us.
I appreciate that.
Okay. When you were busy there, did you hear the request by Representative Murphy?
So yes, as soon as yes.
We
so we'll do that.
Put the bill
Mr. Chairman,
before
I'd like
and we'll
to move that
amendment.
House file 1781 be before
the first engrossment.
First committee engrossment of House file 1781 be before the committee, and I guess recommended to pass now.
No, what we're voting now is strictly the division report. So Representative Kahn moves the State Government Finance Division report for House File 1781, the first committee engrossment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Kahn, you want to move the bill?
Okay, now I'd like to move that House File 1781 be recommended to pass.
The first committee engrossment be recommended to pass and re-referred to the committee
on
ways and means. Representative Murphy, if you're ready, we'll take, I think that's okay with
yes.
Representative Kahn. We take your amendment now then.
Mr. Chair, I move the A-12 amendment to amend portions of the Cultural and Outdoor Heritage Finance Omnibus Bill into House File 1781.
Okay, that motion is before us, and this is one of our realignment motions. We're just taking it a little earlier. So, any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, we've disposed of that amendment. That's your only motion, Representative Murphy, I think, isn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay, so. Representative Kahn, if you want to take care of some author's amendments, then.
Yes. I'd like to move the author's amendment, which is A28, I believe. And that refers to some technical corrections in the bill. The first one is one of the financial parts of the bill, the elimination of deputy commissioners and assistant commissioners, and that this is to make sure that the bill is balanced by make sure that the appropriation is reduced in the first part. The second part has to do with the state investment fund. This was an amendment. This was in the bill, but it turns out we amended the wrong report. And so this changes it to amend the right report, the annual report of the state investment fund. And then the next one is the correction that was brought. This is, again, we have land sales in the bill. This is a minor tweak of the land sales, which deals with a little portion of land in Champlin that is designated as wildlife management land and is totally surrounded by
building and to make sure that it, we had the Commissioner May and we changed it to the Commissioner Mutt. We reached back to the sell the land to a government subdivision.
The motion is before us, and any discussion on the hostage amendment?
Okay.
Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative
Connors. Okay. Mr. Chairman, the state government finance bill is before us. I'll go through take the spreadsheet. The spreadsheet going through the spreadsheet, starting with the legislature. We take a 3% cut to the House, take a 3% cut to the House, the Senate, to the House and the LCC. The Senate in their bill took a 5% cut to each of those, so we decided there was no need to treat the Senate any differently than they wanted to be treated, so we did give the Senate a 5% cut, repeating what came into the bill. We do have to highlight the differences, the House is $1.234 million above the governor, and the LCC is about $696 million above the governor. We essentially gave the constitutional offices most of the treated them as the governor did, which they said that was all right, except for some in the Secretary of State's office. There was a bill from Representative Gaffney that was brought in increasing certain fees, so that takes care of that reduction. And also, there's a very small we didn't give the very small reduction to the state auditor's office, but that's mainly fee determined. In the governor's office, you see a large increase into the governor's office above the House. If you're looking at the spreadsheet, it's over $1 million. That is not a real increase to the governor's office. That's the moving of, we've had a lot of discussion about the lack of openness that the governor has a lot of policy, people that really work on policy from the governor's office in the various agencies, and we've moved the expense for those positions into the governor's office. And we've had no objection to the governor's office on having done that. Continuing constitutional offices. Again, most of these are just exactly the same as they were in the governor's in the governor's budget. There's no difference in the administration, Department of Administration. We did put a small appropriation following a bill of Representative Thiessen on the report on innovation and collaboration opportunities. So that's a small $25,000 appropriation. Again, we didn't do for things, again, for some small agencies, we did not do their, we just followed the governor's recommendation, the CAP board and the finance board. In the finance area, unfortunately, we had the governor's request was a large appropriation for the MAP, the Minnesota Accounting and Procurement System, which is in very bad shape, and which, if it fails, will affect every single part of state government. This is one of the problems that we have. It occurs often in health, but often here, is that, you know, the Commissioner of Administration has testified that when we get this in good shape, we'll probably save tens of millions of dollars on things like procurement expenses and so forth, that these will be working uniformly and well across the board, but there's no way to book them. These are a lot of things that we get in health expenses, like in Karen Clark's bill when we talked about this Women's Heart Health Initiative. There's some evidence that just eliminating the emergency room visits in that will save millions of dollars each year in the state budget, but you can't document it. You can just say that
that this had happened. So that's one of the problems we had with the cost not being able to book the max replacement savings in terms of doing that. Cost of an amendment that was made in committee, we delayed max a year. We cut half of the funding from the governor's budget for max. Delayed it for a year, which actually results in a three-year delay. We've followed the governor's recommendation, small cut for financial oversight and assistance. We were not able to fund the data center consolidation that the governor has asked for, but we did put some small chunk of funding in from one of the revolving funds in OET, and we do have a lot of these things that deal with the office of OET or with some of the things that we put on our technological management were worked out in cooperation with Representative Winkler and Representative Downey, who worked together on so many of the languages. I guess Representative Winkler, so many of the language on those issues, I'll probably turn to Representative Winkler if there are specific questions on that. You notice there's a large addition in the revenue department. When we get to the Department of Revenue, there's a large increase, and that comes into the additional tax compliance initiative, which so there's an additional spending which brings in additional money, and that's used to complete the integrated tax system in the revenue department, which is a lease purchase. So then there are other items in contingent accounts. We have a federal stimulus match contingency. The governor had asked for $5 million because of reductions that were made. We reduced that to $1.775 million. There's some general fund appropriation change items. There was a bill from the Secretary of State, which has been incorporated as Article 3, and that's business filings, net change. And another item where the student fees that change to non-dedicated receipts. This is something that was going back and forth between it, and some of these things are just clarifying paperwork. So there's additional staff, and as I said, for the state stimulus oversight. The Office of Grants Management, this is something we've gone back and forth with. This is now the third iteration of it, which returns to the first iteration, which was changed by the second iteration last year. And this is the concept of grants management. We've had a lot of questions of how we need better grants management in the state. And the first thing we did was direct something that I'm very familiar with, having come from the academic field, where when you get a grant, a proportion of the grant goes to pay overhead to the institution that's getting the grant. And so we said that the administrative expenses, department administration, should be paid for by small offset to the grant. And then they came back last year and asked us to make it a May. Mm-hmm. And then since they didn't do it with the May, we went back and made it a month. So the cost of $250,000 that we have to put out in front, but we recoup it from the grant. And you'll notice, and then in the revenue in the bill, with the additional tax compliance initiative brings in, which was the expenditure of revenue of about $7 million, brings us in $30 million. So the total general fund revenue changes are an addition of 31.14. So I think that's all of the information. So truncated information that you have on the major changes, you do have the complete spreadsheet in front of you, and so of course we're willing to answer any information that's in the spreadsheet. Now I'll then go over some of the items of language in the bill. So then going to Article 2.
It's really bad.
Oh, let me get to Section 25, which is the problem gambling appropriation. That's from the general, that's from the lottery fund. This was a bill of Tom Enzelt. This was kind of an error on not putting it in the original bill. This was something that we've done for a very long time. We've taken money from the lottery fund to pay for the issues, for these things of a problem gambling. You know, we've done it when I first looked at Representative Enzelt's bill, I thought it was taking additional money from that fund, which I thought was unfair. I thought we had a base level. It turned out that the base level had been canceled. The base level had been canceled, so this is just replacing language that had been in existence, which had been canceled from some general process. Okay, now to the going to Article 2, the State Government Operations section. The it's on, starting on page 13 of the bill. One of the things we've done, we have discovered that, you know, I don't know what happened to the Republican caucus, but in the DFL caucus, we have a lot of trouble with the target. Everyone, even though we have the smallest proportion of the state budget, everyone always wants to cut state government. So we changed, and so we changed the name of this division to Enterprise Services and Government Efficiency. We'll see how popular it is to do that. Section 2 is financial management and internal controls. We had lots of hearings on internal controls that had a lot of support in our committee. Section 3 expands the scope of requirements for the legislative auditor to investigate allegations of noncompliance in the course of financial audits. And there's been a whole set of misappropriation and false claims in that, which is from a file 7 of Representative Winkler, and this is also a bill of Representative Simon, which has to have been 5 committees. In section 5 is the one that I referred to before, that the governor's office budget requires that the personnel cost attributed to the office of the governor goes directly from an appropriation, not from diversion from other divisions. Then Section 6 requires the state demographer to release a demographic forecast in conjunction with the Commissioner of Finance. Telephone use approval. Those of you who are long enough to require to recall the telephone scandal, so we now all have to kind of continue. We have this flow of paper going back and forth. We've eliminated that flow of paper for the bill less than $5. So the person is still responsible for paying that amount. But we don't have to do that taking anymore. Section 8 provides that laws may not be named for living people and that laws may not name councils, buildings, roads, or other facilities after living people. This follows facilities after living people. This follows the federal process, which is thereby has never allowed living people on postage stamps. At the end of the bill, we name 3 places where it comes up. It's the Lassard Council, the Douglas Johnson Council, and the Tennyson Warning. And I did note to the committee that it was all male Democratic senators, and so we didn't have any objection with getting rid of that. Of that item. Then we then have the purposes of a public website. We then have the state for, again, an attempt to make government more open, including that Section 9, Section 10 on the contact information. Section 11 came from the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board, which reduces the appropriation from the general account and appropriates that to the state. To the state financing campaign board for hearings for fair campaign practice audit. 12 is the FBI reports to make those more open and transparent. That was the section we amended in the author's amendment. We changed 13. Oh, one of the things that we did do, which was a bill from Representative Pulaski, and I trust the administration, is we transferred the Management Analysis Division from the Department of Administration to the Department of Finance, to the Department of Finance. And so this is 13 is just a change in reference. Section 14 is a traditional thing which comes in this bill, is to make the parking spaces on Aurora Avenue in front of the Capitol to be reserved for the public. And the set is a set of sections. Section 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and 228. Section 228 was the bill of Representative Simon dealing with false claims, and I believe he has a technical amendment to that section, which I think we can take up, which we can take up at any time.
Yeah, that amendment has been distributed.
Okay. Then we have Section 29 provides that the Commissioner of Finance and the Department of Finance may not be identified by a title or name other than the title or name defined by law, and that takes care. That keeps finance as finance instead of MMOB, which we even have members of the administration appearing before us. Can't quite get that straight. So this is some decrease in verbiage in state government, which the public will appreciate. And the Section 30 strikes current law governing duties of the Commissioner of Finance with respect to internal auditing, because the next section prescribes these duties in more detail. And that's in Section 31. And then Section 32, as I've already talked about, the website with searchable database on state expenditures. Again, you know, this is something we've continually been asked to do. The again, the internal control and internal auditing, more provisions in Section 33. Section 34 sets up a financial control council, which again seems to pretty much use existing. And in all places with these internal auditing things, when we're talking about state agencies, you make sure that it doesn't apply to Minsky, because Minsky has already set up a really good system of auditing. In fact, we're modeling, following the advice of the legislative auditor, we're modeling much of what we're trying to do in this bill over what Minsky has already done. The next section is, again, part of the... I'm never sure if they're from Winkler down to your con, but we are all in agreement on these sections. This says that a proposal in the governor's detailed budget for new investments in information technology will be appropriated to OEC instead of the individual departments, and we'll obviously need a procedure for taking those through the budget. Section 37, for those people in the House. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is one that was requested with no okay. This is a bill by Representative Coffey on payroll deposit and deduction, which allows for certain unions, that certain members who belong to two unions were only allowed to make one deduction. It allows them to make two deductions that's of no cost to the state. Again, continuing with the investigate misappropriation of money and the practices for investigation. Then in 40, this is a bill of representative funds on budget reserve percentage requires the Commissioner of Finance to periodically review the formula, so that we'll be periodically looking at the percentage of the general fund expenditures recommended as a budget reserve. Again, 41 is the language that we need to go on to map and to go on to allow a lease purchase amendment. And there was an tax provision related to this, which we deleted in the office amendment and we'll bring that provision to the tax committee chair when she's assembling the tax. It had no tax effect, but it did. It was in to give consoling language to the bond council, but since it's a tax provision, we decided that the tax committee could take care of it. 43 is an efficiency request. This has come through NCSL, CSG, also several times, is that the state entities use standard letter-sized paper to print documents with the serious cost saving, file cabinet saving size, all sorts of things. When we were doing the bill in division, we emphasized the point by printing it on letter-sized paper, but we didn't get to do that for the full committee. But I assure you that the bill works just fine on letter-sized paper. The 44 is... Okay. This is an idea from Representative Tamar's on authorizing the state entity to use space for fitness or wellness classes. And then we have to do something to get rid of the possible liability to make sure that there's no state liability, even if we were doing it. 47 was a section that came from the Audubon Society on bird-safe buildings, and we believe at the point when I started to put this in, I don't think it was happening. It looks like it's already happening, but we think we'll leave it in the bill. The 48 was something, this was of some contention in division. There was an amendment to take it out, which failed. This is, and we didn't book any money for it. This authorizes the Commissioner of Administration to sell naming rights to state-owned buildings or to meeting rooms within buildings. This does not apply to the Capitol or the Judicial Center, but in this sense, we decided, you know, the most esteemed items in state government are sports stadiums and universities. And we decided that this is already being done for the things that have the greatest level of public esteem and viability, we could allow the Department of Administration to see if this would work for other things. We didn't book any money, because we don't know if there'll be any interest in buying and making donations to have hearing rooms named after people or anything. And then this one we came from when we were talking about this sesquicentennial, we saw the fences around the buildings. The fences around the original Capitol building actually had some big advertisement signs. And so we've authorized the Commissioner of Administration to sell advertising on temporary fences or other temporary barriers adjacent to state construction sites. And again, we didn't book any money for that because we'll be back to look at that in the next budget when we have some reports on how those are working. Did the provision of a state car for use by the lieutenant governor, that's only a small saving, about $10,000 a year. We didn't eliminate the lieutenant governor, that's a constitutional amendment, which will have to be before in the future, but the provision of the car is not necessary. And Minnesota milestones require Commissioner's Administration to establish a statewide system of performance measures report annually on trends. The section on the Geospatial Information Office, again, was a governor's request or an administration request. This essentially transfers the Land Management Information Center, which has been, it sort of reincarnates the Land Management Information Center into a Geospatial Information Office. With all the people in concern signed off on this and who have, again, it's no cost, it just puts it in a way that everyone says is better to work with. The 53 Service Disabled Veterans Owned Small Business Preference provided, this was a combination of a bill by Representative Peterson and another bill by Representative Newton, which provides the add service disabled veteran owned small business into the state contract with goods and services prepared by state agencies. This already adds to low income minority women. You know, one of the things why this is really cost effective to do is that this is already a provision in federal law, so these are all defined by federal law, so there isn't any extra work to define them. So that's Section 53 and Section 54, and I believe Representative Stevenson and Representative Newton work together in that. 6 and 55. Okay, so 56 is the statewide electronic licensing system. This creates a statewide electronic licensing account in the Special Revenue Fund. Many of these, this is, again, this is a request again from the state. From the administration. This is actually continuing an effort that is about half done. Many of you may have heard from various groups, specifically, and maybe more than I even know about, complaining about this. The realtors and the social workers. Anyway, we put in some language that's agreeable to the Treatment Department of Commerce. I will just emphasize that for all of them concerned, it's a very, very small amount on the individual person. And so you may still be hearing about that. I think it's okay the way it is. Section 57 defines domestic partner for the purposes of a later section of the bill relating to health insurance for state employees. 58 is a donation to the sick leave account. 59 is domestic partner benefits. This section, because of possible fiscal implications, which may not be correct, so we may not need to do it, we've made that section effective only January 1st, 2012. And then the voluntary unpaid leave of absence is something that's been carried in this bill over the years. This makes permanent the provision that allows a state employee to take voluntary unpaid leave of absence. And this is not the controversial failure thing that you may have helped to. The management analysis revolving fund is in connection with the transfer sheet. Mississippi River critical area, these were a whole set of areas. This is the governor had a whole set of a huge section, 4 pages of language, I think, in the bill that he provided to us, which possibly only I recognized because there were all failed legislative projects that I had dealing with the university steam plant and the congerator. We took all that language out in the bill, and we put there's a little tiny piece of land that's still in contention, and that's dealt with in Section 63. Section 60. Okay, I guess this is the section that we just took out of the... yes, I'm getting nods. Section 64 is the section we just took out of the higher education bill, and I think nothing needs to be added. Nothing needs to be added to this bill to deal with that.
Representative Khan, I am told that there are some things that need to be added back in.
Oh, okay. Well, somebody...
We've got an amendment.
Somebody has an amendment to that. Add that.
And as soon as you're done, we'll move to the amendments. We've got several here at the desk, so...
Okay,
that'll be one of them.
I've got several notes from people saying that they read the bill word for word, but they don't need me to say anymore. So at this point, I guess I hope that anyone who has questions on any of the other courts will raise those questions.
So everybody can put their white hankies away, I think.
And so forth. So...
Okay, we will. What I'd like to do is take up the amendments, and then at that point we'll revert to general discussion. I have a couple of people saying, "Is that part of the general discussion?" Or yeah, so we'll hold on those and just take up the amendments next.
Mr.
If that's all right with you, Representative.
Can I first deal with the one that has to do with the Rivera bill?
Yeah,
that.
We've got that been distributed.
On and it's page 54. Is that the
The handwritten amendment with your name on it looks like this year that Ms. Novak completed.
Okay, right.
Okay, Representative Kahn.
I'd like to move that amendment.
Representative Kahn moves the amendment. Any discussion? This is reinserting the, with the exception of that one section that was already in the bill, the items that we took out of Representative Ruth Covina's bill. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. There are two amendments that have been distributed, A-21 and A-20, that author indicated would not be being offered. Representative Simon has an amendment. I think he will be right back, so we'll hold on that one for a moment. We have, let's see, the only other one, I guess, at this point, and at least the members present, is one by Representative Teffin, A-27.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I do have several concerns with this bill, but one of the big concerns I have with the bill, and I think the chair shares this concern with me, is the problem that we have with our Minnesota accounting and procurement system. It's on the brink of failure. I have grave concerns about it. The OET just a couple days ago said it's not an option. We have to pay for this. Failure is imminent. Everything that, and all accounting transactions, procurement transactions, payment, payroll transactions. Yes, this is in my amendment.
You should probably move the amendment first, then.
Okay. Well, I'll move the A-27 amendment.
The motion is before us, and Representative Evans.
So, I have a big concern that we pay for this funding right now and not delay it because it could literally fail at any time. And in order to pay for that, do you want me to? I can probably run through the numbers. In order to pay for that, on the line 1.3, what the change in the numbers means, the $2.275 million, that's for the contingency account from the stimulus funds, and that would reduce that number to $674,000, which would give the MAPS project $1.6 million. On the next line, $1.4 million, that's not enough to pay for the MAPS project. The MAPS project is, I think, in the spreadsheet it was nearly $9 million. The rest of the money would come from a casino slots at the airport. And those two numbers, it would be, so generally the numbers to pay for the MAPS system would be from those two things, about 1.6 from the contingency account, and about 7.3 that would come from income generated from slot machines at the casino, and I believe it would be in balance if this amendment were passed. And perhaps the chair could address this issue too.
Well, Chairman, this item was in my initial bill. It was taken out in committee by an amendment offered by Representative Bigham. I voted against taking it out and lost. Mm-hmm. I'll still make, at this point, I'll obviously leave it to the judgment of the committee. I intend to vote for the Teffin Amendment, although I would not have moved it. And the, I have nothing to do with either asking or writing. But anyway, I'll just give my reasons. I think this is the best chunk of free money that we have in front of the state. This is not, I know that there are people who are concerned about it. This has, I have always voted against just about every gambling item because I've always considered it a regressive tax on stupidity. This item I actually consider a progressive tax on stupidity because if you read it, you're not able to use these slot machines at the airport unless you have a boarding pass, which tends to be an economically upper class, upper level class. It brings the amount of money that it brings in is
Yes. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Helen Roberts from the House Fiscal Staff. The amount of general fund revenue that the fiscal note says would be brought in by this is for 10 and 11, $7.374 million, and then for the 12-13 biennium, $14.726
million. And actually, that's low from the money that we, that's low from the recommendation that came from the information that we've had from the lottery, and it also doesn't even count the 40% that would go to the Environmental Trust Fund. There's another 40% that's out there that would go to the Environmental Trust Fund, which would give a lot of things that people would like to spend money on. We didn't even count that. We didn't pay any. So that's all the information I have. And I'm just leaving it up to the judgment of the committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, lines 1.3 and 1.4 of your amendment, we had a request from the governor and the management and budget to have some monies available to meet and do the matching that might be required for federal funds under the Recovery Act. Mm-hmm. I think his request was $5 billion, and it's been reduced to 2.275. You're reducing it down to $674,000. Is the amount available $674,000? Is there some reason for that other than just taking money, or have you had conversations with the governor's office or management budget that that's all that is necessary that potentially to and make meet any grants that may be forthcoming?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, as you probably know, $3 million was taken out in state government from the contingency account, and I did not talk to the governor's office specifically about the contingent account, although it's a contingent account, so it's not necessarily going to be used. So I think from my discussions with some, I believe that the MAP system is so important that it makes sense to use the funds to pay for the system, and that's just the amount that was the amount that I needed to find to balance it, because the airport slots didn't make the $8.9 million that I needed to pay for the MAP program to be implemented this year.
Mr. Chair, I just have a little concern, and I understand it's a contingency account. We're trying our best to work with the governor's office on most issues and Department of Management and Budget. We came as a request from them, and I understand that some money was taken, but to go from $5 million at their request down to $674 was seems like kind of a big drop. And if it's that's why I would like to have some conversation with Commissioner Hanson to see if that is available enough.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I can say the in every conversation I've had with the Commissioner of Finance, his highest concern has been with MAP and with the non-funded MAP. And I don't want to say that. We didn't specifically discuss that thing.
Any further discussion? Representative Seven.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I can't stress enough how important this MAP program is to the state. It's the Minnesota Accounting and Procurement System. I discussed it earlier, but it deals with everything, payroll, any procurement, any accounting transactions, and it's the OEP set us in jeopardy of failure, and it would be a disaster. It would be a huge problem in our state system, and as Representative Kahn, the chair of the committee, said, it's the biggest priority that the governor's office has identified in maintaining our systems. And I just view that this reducing the contingency account, which we may or may not need, is a higher priority than leaving it there, and we may or may not even ever need it. So I just feel strongly, and I think the chair feels strongly, that this is
an important expenditure, and that it would be a problem. I think what the OET said was that this is not an option. Failure is imminent. And it could happen. It could break down. The system is very old, and it could break down any time. So, oh, and Mr. Chair, I would like a roll call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is more of a question for Representative Kahn, but Representative Kahn, if it's true that this is an issue of the highest priority, why isn't it funded in your bill as it exists?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it was funded in the bill as it went before the division. It was removed in the division. And it was, there were three high priority data issues that were, three data issues that the governor's office came up, or the administration came forward. One was the concept of data center consolidation. And that was for about $16 million. And we had hoped to actually do that in the bonding bill, although they really weren't ready for this smaller bonding bill. We hoped to do that next year. The nice thing about doing that in a bonding bill is that we could then, that's the only circumstances to which you could bond for information systems if they're being done at the same time you do a building. So we took care of that one by just putting some language about starting the planning for it, and also some language from in cooperation with Representative Downey about looking at what you might do in terms of all the other options, lease purchase, outsourcing, and so forth. The next one was the integrated electronic tax system. Yes, the integrated tax system. And the problem with that is that one's halfway done. And so that one we were able to fund by increasing the tax compliance. And we completely agreed, if you can find another $16 million, what the amendment that took out the spots from the airport, and another shift that I had done on the payments of teachers' pension funds, which I had made a strong argument to do, that saved $20 million in the bill. I made a strong argument that it wasn't taking the money from the funds, it was just the shift and the not paying it for several years, which was actually a much less harmful shift than the shifts that we're doing in the education bill, and that was taken out on a vote, and at one point that was put back in on a tie vote, but then it had to be taken out again to get the necessary votes to pass the bill. Yeah, you've been on this committee, Representative Hilde. You hopefully with the change of name in the future it will be a little easier, but that there's now, I was told at one point that one certain unnamed senator in the Senate moved to cut all of the technology appropriations out of the Health and Human Services budget to use all of that money to do good things for good people and so forth. I'm sorry, that unnamed senator was not allowed to do that, but that's the kind of thing that we deal with all the time. You cannot make a politically cogent statement to fund something like that. So we took care of, we had three data priority ones, and this one we took care of, I initially tried to do it, we took care of it by just moving it off a year. So, and if you can find any other way to do it in the budget, you're welcome to talk.
Mr. Chair, for Representative Pepin or Representative Kahn, I have a 1988 Ford pickup truck that whose failure is imminent. I understand that. I'm not entirely sure that I understand what the imminent failure of a system such as this consists of. I don't think that parts are going to start falling off it or anything. Can you explain what constitutes or why there's an imminent failure of this system?
Okay, we do have someone from finance who could speak specifically to that.
There is a question specifically to first with finance, that's fine.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Yoakum with the Department of Finance. I apologize, I'm not the technology person for our office, but specifically to Representative Hilde's questions and some of the broader items.
about possible failure with the MAP system. Basically, you're taking 1980s technology and with an early 1990s mainframe system being used for that. One issue is that this is done on old COBOL programming, with COBOL programming. That's really not compatible with some of the newer systems. I've already had a situation with NINSCU, I think, down at the Winona campus, where they're already using some of the new Microsoft software that's no longer compatible with the system. So therefore, you're basically running two computer systems just in order to do the accounting and procurement portion of it. The annual upgrade, we can do some programming upgrades on the accounting side of the programming. On the procurement side, I don't believe we can do any more type of upgrades on that. So anytime any new operating systems come out there, the Microsoft computer systems or anything, we really can't update anything on the procurement side, and the accounting side is getting older and older. Some of the other options is we're losing the state employees that still have the experts on how to, that have the expertise on actually how to program the old system. And really, that's such an outdated type of programming that we can't find new people to do that. And so the expertise that would be needed to hire it out, if we could still find consultants that might be able to go back into the old COBOL system, would be incredibly expensive. So those are a couple of the key items that are there. But this is definitely an old system that experiences regular malfunctions and shutdowns.
So, Mr. Chair,
can help me.
Mr. Yocum, was the replacement of the system funded in the governor's budget proposal then?
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Duffy, yes.
Mr. Yocum, was that funded by having a casino at the airport, or what was the governor's proposal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Duffy, that was part of the lease purchase money.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I can just add to Mr. Yocum, the COBOL programming is so old that I actually even learned a little bit of it.
There's a solution,
not enough to take care of this.
On this point,
Mr. Chair, I know that there are businesses out there that are training young people on the COBOL system because, and one of them happens to be of my district, because it's a lot cheaper to keep the system sometimes intact and find the people that, and train the people that fix them. You know, you're still alive, Representative Kahn.
But I couldn't fix it.
No. But and there are a lot of people that worked on these that are around to train others, younger people. Sometimes we do spend a lot more, a lot of money on technology that doesn't need to be spent, and this is one time that I think we don't have to do it. So.
Representative Garofalo and Lincheski, are you on the amendment? Your names have been there for a while. Okay, Representative Garofalo, not on the amendment. Okay, Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pepin or Kahn, either one. Does the Metropolitan Airports Commission have a position on this concept?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincheski, no. There have been people in the past who have said something favorable about it. You know, I go back to the history of dealing with the Metropolitan Airports Council on the lottery, which is for many years we tried to get the lottery terminals into the airport, and the Metropolitan Airports Commission completely showed no interest in doing it. We put language in law that said may, and they still showed no interest in doing it. We finally put language in law that said must, and they did it. It hasn't seemed to have destroyed the airport, and it turns out that that lottery location at the airport is the highest return of any lottery location in the state. So I think going from that, as you understand, see in the language, there is, they get to say what they. If it's unreasonable, they can refuse to do it. So it's I think if this should this happen to go into the bill, I think we'll possibly hear from it.
Representative
Jesse. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kahn. I oppose this, and I
I think you know that. I'm not a fan of using gambling revenues to fund government, but just thinking about it, because this is my community staffs a lot of the through the bomb squad and police and whatever this facility. Why the main terminal? Why the Lindbergh as opposed to the Humphrey terminal?
Well, Mr. Salmon, Representative Lentesky, I think the reason is because that's where most of the particularly one of the attractions of this is that 85% of the people passing through the terminal with boarding passes are from out of state. So Representative Seifert at one point said it's just like these people come into the state and we pick them up by the ankles and we take them out over our treasury. And I've also shared your dislike of gambling, but this is the one thing which is so restrictive and so specific. And I thought of this actually when I was passing through Amsterdam and saw the Holland Casino in the Amsterdam airport. Tried to go into it as a sense of, you know, just for safety. For research purposes, and they didn't even let me in because I was separated from my husband, who was carrying our boarding passes because he doesn't trust me to carry my own.
Mr. Chair,
the answer is to get more of the people who might be likely to be delayed and be using it and not.
Well, and to that point, Mr. Karen, thank you. And Rep. Sun Khan, again, you know, I have no idea the likelihood of passage of this amendment right now, so I'm asking seriously. The Humphrey Terminal, I mean, Rep. Broad and I were sort of talking, and it's a creative approach on, you know, you were saying in your earlier comments that it's a progressive tax, and I guess the idea would be that it's wealthier people who tend to have boarding passes, but if you really want to go down that road, and if you want to really export the tax to non-Minnesotans, it's really the Lindbergh Terminal that has all the international flights and probably the highest income. So I'm just really, you know, trying to think this through. If this actually passes, why it would be in the main terminal is just a little odd to me.
Okay, well, Representative Lentesky, in honor of your contribution, I would like to, or Representative Pepin might accept this as her amendment. I would actually, I would suggest striking the main and put down within any terminal. If Representative Pepin would accept that to her amendment.
Okay, well, that's that's incorporated
into
the amendment. Clerk will take the roll.
Carlson?
No.
Broad?
Yes.
Biskins?
Yes.
Campion?
No.
Clark?
No.
Hammer?
Yes.
Groffel?
No.
Greiling?
No.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Hausman?
No.
Hilty?
No.
House? Huntley?
No.
Junkie?
Aye.
Karn?
Aye.
Kiffmeyer? Knuth?
No.
Kolb? Benchesky?
No.
Murphy?
No.
Tamar?
No.
Pepin?
Yep.
Rukavina?
Pass.
Szymanski?
Aye.
Simon?
No.
Slawick?
No.
Smith?
Aye.
Solberg?
That was an aye.
Keithin?
Like a pass.
Wagenius?
No.
Winkler?
No.
Look, Kabina votes aye.
Silver.
Okay, being 10 ayes, 17 nays, the motion is defeated. Probably should say one a little indecisive.
Okay.
Now have Representative Luca Bean.
I was just wondering if Representative Kahn is going to be introducing any other amendments that she saw in Amsterdam to raise money. Before we get out of here today.
Representative Kahn, would you care to respond?
I thought this was the best shot.
Representative Simon, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I offer the A25 amendment. I'll move it.
The motion is before us, Representative Simon, on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This pertains to the portion of the bill that is the False Claims Act. It's traveling separately. Many of you, most of you by my count, have heard it since it's had five previous committee hearings, so I'm not going to belabor the point on the substance. But I have had 19 meetings now with various stakeholders from around the state on this bill. And those of you who have heard it before, I've told you, several of you, they will be working with them on one more big amendment, and this is it. To change some things and put some things in that they wanted. So these are concessions on my part and on the part of the authors of the bill. The first thing on 1.5 lowers the penalties from $5,500 to $5,000 and $11,000 to $10,000 respectively. That means they're completely in line and even with the federal penalties for the Federal False Claims Act. The second substantive thing is on line 1.8, that deletion of page 22, line 6 to 8, deletes a key portion of the bill. That bill would have, or I guess still does until we pass the amendment, provided for liability in the case of inadvertence, well, in a case where a person, which is defined as, you know, a business, an entity, whatever, benefits by someone else's inadvertence and then knowingly fails to report it. That's been in the bill all along. We have now agreed to get rid of that. So now there is nowhere in the bill at all that anyone can be liable for any reason, for any inadvertence, mistake, negligence, etc. So now the only standard of proof is knowingly. Only those who knowingly defraud or whose subordinates knowingly defraud can possibly be liable under this bill. And that, too, gets the bill in line with the feds. Third, on line 1.12, that's basically a new title. It's the right to cure, but it makes the right to cure a lot more meaningful now that we did what I just described before. And this reiterates, this is comfort language that reiterates that no one is liable, period, for any inadvertence or mistake. It's only for knowing conduct and behavior. And then finally, on line 1.13, this is a significant concession and something that ought to put a lot of folks at ease. This strengthens the provision in the bill that gives mandatory attorney's fees to a defendant who wins, basically, a defendant who's been brought to court and the defendant wins. There's already a mandatory attorney fee provision here. This just says that the attorney's fees are, they're eligible for the attorney's fees, not merely where someone has solely brought the case for purposes of harassment, but where they've done so in substantial part. So that's a major concession, and I would think it's probably one of the strongest, if not the strongest now, attorney fee provision in state law, I would be willing to wager. So they ought to like this. Thanks, members.
Okay, motion is before us. Any discussion on the Simon Amendment? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Simon, I think you've moved this in the right direction. I appreciate the work that you've done. I still have some concerns related to the provision. The person or slash business still has to prove that they didn't knowingly do something. Yet, on page 21, there's no proof of a specific intent to defraud required from the outset. So you can make the claim and throw it into court, but the business or person still has to prove that they knowingly didn't do something. And so it just seems to me that there's still some interaction issues between those two provisions. And I think while it's moving in the right direction, I hope that you'll continue working with various folks on those two things. My concern is that inadvertently, as we discussed in other committees, you can knowingly input a number into a system, but not knowingly know that it's wrong. And so while you've moved in the right direction, I guess I'm still concerned over that standard and what that actually means.
Representative Simon, did you have any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Okay, on the bill then, I don't have any further amendments here. So, Representative Biskins, thank you for waiting while we dispose of the amendment.
Thank you.
Maybe you remember what you were going to talk about. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's come to me, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Tom, Section 50 of the bill looks a little mean-spirited and small-minded. Can you please explain to us the purpose of that section?
Repeat what you're referencing, Representative Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tom, actually, I should be referencing Section 51, and it starts on page 39 and ends, the critical piece there on page 40, where we take away the car from the second highest elected official in the state of Minnesota, the lieutenant governor, and say she can't participate in the state's vehicle pool. Again, it seems a little small-minded.
First time a lieutenant governor's car, I think, is what question.
It's not a huge amount. You can move to delete that if you want. I just seems to me that she didn't need a car. We were just kind of surprised when we saw the governor's budget that he had a car. I think that was kind of put in. There was a former lieutenant governor who shall not be named, where the governor's office kind of wanted to keep track of her, and that's when she was kind of assigned the car and the driver. But, you know, it just seems, I don't know if you think that none of us get assigned the car, and we all seem to do all the work that we have to do. And if you think that the lieutenant governor has more work than we have to do, you know, I haven't seen a lot of indication of that, but it's not, you know, it's not a big deal. It's not mean spirited. It was just surprising to see that this is out of the budget.
Representative Fulbert.
I mean, I'm quite sure that she has, when looking at her budget, I'm quite sure that she can do travel expenses and all kinds of things. We didn't do anything to that. Just the way the provision of the vehicle.
Representative Fulbert.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Kahn, page 13. Line 13.21. I know that you want to change the name of your committee. But the committee also has to, your division also has to conduct periodic events for the lien system. Can you give me a definition of periodic? Does that mean that the committee has to conduct these events every week, every 50 years?
Mr. Chairman, it has to do with, of course, the definition of what crazy events are.
Yeah.
And that is, comes from a Japanese word which talks about the intermittent improval of processes by kind of doing it, not doing it as a cataclysmic event, but doing it a bit one at a time. So specifically not determined if, you know, as someone says, this is a process that will work well, we kind of look at it and do it.
She answered that without, just about got through without laughing.
These are terms that came from the Department of Administration.
I understand the Department of Administration does that for their lien. I'm just kind of surprised that the new Committee of Enterprise Services and Government Efficiency Finance Division is going to do that. I don't know what that acronym is.
It's good stuff, I assure you.
It's good stuff, okay.
And you, as an ex officio member, Representative Solberg will welcome your participation.
Represent Mr. Chair?
So are you, Solberg.
So are you an ex official?
That's right. I was about to say, however, that I haven't said much about that, but I'm not particularly comfortable with beginning naming committees in statutes, but we'll see where this one ends up. I was concerned.
It's not done in the Senate bill.
It's not done in the Senate bill, but you're good at upholding the House position. That's my concern. That could lead us down an interesting path, I guess, in terms of how committees are named and structures and so on, but maybe there's somebody in a corner office that might have some thoughts about that in this building, corner office. Representative Solberg, were you done?
I
thought maybe you might have an amendment, but...
Well,
yeah. We both want to be welcome in the committee yet, right? But, okay, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn, on the spreadsheet, row 847, we have additional tax compliance. Looks like we're booking $30 million in the upcoming biennium and $40 million in the next biennium. And I have some concerns about what we're doing already. Many complaints from my district and just from family members about the pretty aggressive nature of collections of their businesses. And I'm just wondering if you could tell me, give me some examples of some taxes that are not being paid. And if you, from a historical perspective, could give us some insight over the last two bienniums, how much compliance revenue was built into those forecasts and how much of that compliance revenue is still built, is actually built into our base already.
Yes, well, actually we've done, this is done in discussion with the revenue department so that we're quite sure it is within their ability to do it. The important point is that this compliance is really specifically linked to the funding of the integrated tax system, which will make things very much easier for everybody, and will probably ease off on the compliance problem. And the integrated tax system is halfway done, and this will manage to complete it. Each time we've had a compliance initiative in the budget, we've gone above what the governor has requested and what the department had said they could do. And each time they've gone beyond what the success has been beyond what was predicted by what we did. So we didn't, I think, Ms. Roberts, do you want to say any other comments about that?
Roberts.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, there's actually a history of this in the governor's budget pages for Department of Revenue. These recent initiatives were started in the 2002-2003 biennium, at which point the department was appropriated $9.7 million, expected to generate $60 million, but actually generated $97.2 million. Then in the 2004-05 biennium, they received $12.8 million, and I can make a copy of this for you. Expected to generate almost $60 million and in fact generated $92.2 million. In the 2006-07 biennium, the legislature appropriated $17.8 million with an expectation that would generate an additional $90.7 million. And in fact, that generated $114.3 million. And then in the 2008-09 biennium, the legislature appropriated $20.5 million to generate $102.4 million. And that, of course, is still underway, but as of November, the effort had generated $87.9 million, which is 86% of the expected amount.
I'm grateful. But, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, does the Department of Revenue then support this provision?
I think it's better to say that they don't oppose it. I don't know if there's anyone here from the
public. Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn, I have had in the last year no fewer than a dozen local businesses contact me. People I know about how aggressive the Department of Revenue is in shaking businesses down on this. And I have no doubt that the program's been successful based off of what's been happening. Literally a business in my district just finally went to the auditor and said, how much money do you want? He said, just tell me how much money you need so I can get you out of here, because the amount of money I'm going to pay you is going to be cheaper than the cost of having you hang around for another week. And this is only my third term in the legislature, but every year these numbers get more aggressive and the tactics outside of the cabinet get more aggressive. And it can't be that good of an idea because they didn't include it in their base budget recs. And I just, I have a real problem with us going back to this well again. Because again, my understanding is these numbers are actually built into the base going forward, right? Okay, so just I wanted to voice my objections. And
I mean, you know, I've heard complaints from people doing on a personal level on the federal system. My husband said exactly the same thing that your constituents did, is that next time they come to me, I'm going to ask them what they want, add $1,000 to that, and write them a check and tell them to go away so I don't have to so that I don't have to do anything. So it's not just the problem in station. But most people really feel that the most important thing is to have people paying that fair share in terms of tax collection. And I don't, you know, there are all kinds of revenue enhancers that I would support well over this, and I don't think we probably agree on those two subjects. But I support all kinds of revenue raises. Well, we've already defeated one that I would have supported. So I have other things just like that. I think I did point out to the governor at one point, and he actually even repeated it at one point, that if we were to legalize gay marriage in this state, it would be a billion-dollar industry added to the state. That's from not my analysis, it's from Forbes magazine's financial analysis. So there are all kinds of things we could do that I'm willing to do that other people aren't. So this is something that we've kind of been able to settle on between the committee.
And Mr. Chairman, now we've come full circle. So thank you. Thank you for that, John.
If I could mention one thing, we've got a couple of people that have indicated that questions, and then we'll move to some motions, and if we can move rather quickly, we might even get out in time to have a little lunch. So this is our last bill for the day. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Khan, I want to thank you. You've made this bill very easy to vote against, so I appreciate you putting all this stuff in together. But a few things. Regarding the naming rights, you specifically state that the state capitol building does have naming rights, and so I'm wondering if this room, we could be in the Xcel Energy room or the Wells Fargo office building room here in this building.
We did not, again, it's a decision of the Department of Administration. There's no requirement to do it. We didn't put the state office building on that list. If anyone feels it could be added to that list, it could be.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chairman and Representative Khan, can you tell me where I might find, or if it's included somewhere, the total fee increases for the Secretary of State's office related to businesses?
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, I can show you the two lines that the fee changes and increases show up on. And the first is on line 843 under the second to last page of the spreadsheet under direct general fund revenues. You'll see the line for House File 1463. The general fund impact for the business filing changes within that bill is $133,000 for the 10-11 biennium. And then on the next page on line, at the very top of the next page on line 853, this is the non-general fund portion for the temporary surcharge extension. The total for 10-11 is $1.95 million.
Okay, and thank you very much, Ms. Roberts, for that. And Mr. Chairman and Representative Khan, I guess I'm concerned about those increases and what it means for businesses in the state. Businesses are struggling to keep their doors open. They're struggling to keep people employed, and any cost increases make that even more difficult. And so if we're looking at something in the realm of about $1.9 million to businesses in the state, I wanted to express my concern related to that. The other question I had, Representative Khan, is regarding a number of the elections provisions and the elections policy provisions, and why they're included in this bill versus coming through in a separate bill, like has often been done in the past. For example, the registration issues and things along those lines. What is the rationale for that?
The rationale is that they are financial issues dealing with the Secretary of State's issues. They do use the HAVA funds, which are so that they do have an appropriation required with it. In the past we've sent them alone, and we've also incorporated them into this bill. I think I don't believe they were controversial. If I could say something about the business fees, I think all of those came from the Secretary of State's office, and they were negotiated with the entities and combined. And I've had this item in my bill at many times, and we've always found that businesses in general appreciate the increase in the extra ease of service, the doing renewals electronically and so forth. And so we have not had We have not had an objection from the people submitting the fees would be applied. I'm rather, at least they're, let me say, at least they're
represented.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn, I appreciate that, but we're in special times, and I'm not sure businesses would appreciate or love to have these fee increases on them or their employees going forward, even though maybe in the past they've said, you know, we're willing to do this for this level of service. I think right now businesses should and do expect the government to do more. And to do maybe even the same level of service, but to not put any more on their backs. And so while I appreciate what you're saying, I have some strong concerns over that provision. And then Representative Kahn, I just wanted to ask you if you'd reconsider at some point before this gets to the floor the car issue. I mean, when you look at the state lottery director, you look at the state gambling board, it seems petty, and I think, Representative Kahn, you're way, way beyond that, so I appreciate you maybe reevaluating that provision before this gets to the floor.
I'm
certainly willing to consider. I just looking at anything that I know, and you may know much more than I know about what the Lieutenant Governor is doing these days, but I just haven't seen any indication that he needs to talk. And if anyone would come to me with that kind of indication, I'd certainly be glad to put it in there. And I ask, I'm quite sure, and we'll check on this, that our travel expenses are paid. Representative Broad, I'd rather give you a car, I believe, in terms of the work I know that you do.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, Representative Kahn. On Section 57 of the bill, on page 46, you have an electronic licensing system, which I'm very familiar with because I use electronic licensing with my appraisal license in this state. And I see, you know, you're putting a surcharge on for electronic license, and then on 46.25 through 46.27, you exempt Department of Commerce licensees who are already paying for that, and that I assume is me and real estate agents and others who already have electronic licensing. And my question is, why only Department of Commerce? I think there's other boards and departments that also people already have electronic licensing, like the nurses. I have 350 nurses in my district that already have electronic licensing. And was that an oversight to not exempt them from paying twice for that electronic licensing that they already have? I mean, I understand the surcharge if you're moving into it.
We have, Mr. Chairman. We have heard from the nurses. We had heard from the realtors. We did hear from the nurses. We did hear from the social workers. The realtors went to the Department of Commerce and worked out this language so that it's held harmless in terms of what, I mean, the problem is, we do have these licensing systems, but there is a discussion to make it all onto a central one-stop electronic licensing system. One of the things that I lost, you know, in the tough times that we're all in, I lost everyone who came to my office to complain about this. I asked them how much their license cost and what this additional fee was. And I'll give you one example. The license cost, and we don't put this fee, there's certain licenses that we give without fee and there's no fee put on for those. I'll give it for one person who came, the license cost $250+ or something like that, which was good for 2 years. So the amount we were talking about was roughly $25 in 2 years. And with the problems that we were dealing with in state government, and, you know, this is someone who's licensed, but who is employed, I just kind of refused to consider that at this time. We did add the language, some comfort language at the bottom, 46.32 to 46.34. And if they're able to work out the kinds of things in terms of, but the realtors were different. If they're already going into the system, and they were being asked to pay a little bit more. There is dissension as to whether these things like nurses and social workers need to be in the central system. The people who know much more about it than me have said that the security is far better, that, and, you know, there's there's a legislative auditor's report on small agencies that doesn't go into detail, which talks about the problems of some of those security systems. So I'm comfortable in doing this. I'm really comfortable that nobody is being hit with something that they can't
afford to pay. I think the language at that bottom means that we'll have time, that this is an iterative, gradual process, we'll have time to deal with these in the future if it turns out that there is possible to not charge them.
Well, and again, Mr. Chair, I'm just viewing it as a fairness issue. I mean, if someone's already paid for an electronic license system and are utilizing it, we shouldn't be charging them again on any licensee. I understand what you're saying, and who is the chief information officer that they need to talk to? Pardon me?
Opal Connor, John Lawley in the department is someone who's been talking to people about
that. I'm sure that's an issue that will be revisited as this moves on, or maybe even in conference committee, because I know there are concerns out there with some of the licensees that already have them, and some of us have substantial constituencies in our district that fall into that category.
But my only assurance is that I've looked at it, I don't think it's a burden on any individual. I understand what you're saying, the dissension, and I'm not able to engage in this, in an completely informed manner, is whether the new system will be, we've had scandals in state government with credit cards being misused, Social Security numbers being misused, and so forth, and I can't answer that, whether these systems that they've already paid for are as good as what they'll get. But the one thing I'm quite sure of is that it's not a big burden on any individual person, no matter how much they can find.
Do you have over?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make an oral amendment on page 39. Line 17, delete the or, put it insert a comma, and then at the end of the sentence, before the period, insert or state office building.
Yeah, I think we all understand what that amendment is. Represents time.
It's a fine amendment. If these people are much more sensitive, obviously, than I am about
it.
My fear is that at some point my grandchildren, maybe in the legislature, they may ask us to be in a con or sober room, and we wouldn't want that to happen.
but with the further thing in the bill, it won't happen while we're here to see it. Okay.
Yeah. Any further discussion on the Solberg Amendment dealing with the state office building? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Khan, I mentioned earlier I'm a little troubled by naming a committee in law. Would you be amenable to taking a look at removing that? You made a mistake. You didn't mention finance or ways and means.
I like it the way
environmental, natural resources, capital investments. I'm just looking around at the different chairs.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, you've been in caucuses when we discussed this, and no one discusses how insignificant this target is to state government. No one ever says that those committees don't deserve every penny that they get. So, it's obviously not an integral part of the bill. I think it's, I kind of like it in the bill, but
you like it in there. I'm not going to move it at this point, but I wanted to know how amenable you were. It does set a precedent if that were to happen that I don't think we really want to do. That's why I mentioned other committees. Didn't seriously mean that they should be mentioned. They would be wanting to go the other direction. But think about that as your bill moves forward, and maybe by the time it hits the House floor, we can have another little discussion about that. And maybe the chief author of the bill will have an author's amendment when it hits the floor. Okay, any further discussion? Well, seeing none, Representative Khan, you have a motion, and this now we're moving to wind bills up again. And then when we do that, we will have concluded our business. So, Representative Khan.
So, this is the motion to delete
Article 4.
4.
Okay,
I move to delete Article 4.
That motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Then, Representative Khan, on the main amendment, Representative Kahn.
Do I have to move, I move the A14 amendment to incorporate military affairs? Do I have to do that too?
No, we're not at that point yet.
Oh, okay.
We do that when we get down on another bill. What we simply need to do now is pass your bill.
Okay.
As amended. So
renew my motion that the bill pass as amended.
Okay, and be referred to the Committee on Waste and Means. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We are now down to, we should have a motion by Representative Junkie on House File 1122.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 1122, First Committee Engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, that motion is before us.
And then, Mr. Chair, I have a couple of amendments, author's amendments. One we talked about last week and another one that came in since that I'd like to move. I think I'd move the 843 amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us.
And, Mr. Chair, this is an amendment that Representative Biskins brought up. The language maybe needs a little tightening on who the veterans' information was available to. And so this is the result of that. Our drafter rewrote it, and we think now it's tightened it up that it's strictly for Department of Veterans Affairs for a strict use in their department. And I think that should take care of it.
The motion is before us. Representative Biskins, that was the issue you raised, and I assume to solve the problem you were concerned about. Okay, if there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
And then, Mr. Chair, I'd move the 453 amendment, and that's one that came in since in visiting with Representative Guineas, as the bill was heard earlier in the week. She noticed the section where we're actually working on breeding and studying native grasses and plants here in the state up in Roseau, along with the University of Minnesota, for possible future fuel crops and other things. And she wanted to make sure, and I concur at this point, that there's no genetic degradation of our existing prairie plants and others as these things are moved and researched and other things. So we're putting in this comfort language. It should not affect anything that's going on in those breeding programs, and certainly it's not the intent of our U of M researchers to genetically alter our native prairie grasses. You know, until such time, just so people know, we've had this issue with wild rice in the past and some other things. The problem with some of these crops are like switchgrass. We don't have a germplasm storage and retention facility or program on some of these crops. With corn, for example, native maize and other things, we've got all the original germplasm stored. We can go back, you know, to day one of humankind here on this Minnesota land and recreate those plants, or at least have the genetic makeup. And until we do that with some things like wild rice or switchgrass in this case or others, we have to be very careful what we do in breeding programs so we don't genetically alter something we can never get back. And so that kind of addresses this, and I concur with Representative Guineas and add this, at least at this time, as comfort language, and we'll talk about it going forward if there's any problems with the language.
Okay, motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. That should
Representative Kahn.
Bring us down to a motion by Representative Kahn.
So then I move the A14 amendment to incorporate military affairs into the Agriculture and Veterans Affairs Omnibus Bill.
Okay, and that motion is before us. Any discussion? Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I know this decision is made by folks that are not sitting at this table in terms of how these bills are going to move forward together. But to incorporate the military affairs provisions in with provisions over same-sex marriage and things along those lines, I think is a big mistake. When you start putting provisions that are extremely controversial,
we're taking it out of her bill and putting it into my bill.
Perfect. Then,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I will be very thrilled with this. I thought we were putting it in, and I would be extremely opposed to that. I apologize for my error and appreciate the direction you're going.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I'll just confirm that. In the Senate, Senator Bickerman's committee has military affairs, and for some reason that division has remained in state government. So to match up, now we're moving it from Representative Kahn's bill into my bill where I carry veterans affairs, and it makes a little more sense.
And just for question, there's absolutely nothing in the bill that deals with same-sex marriage. Let me make that clear.
Mr. Chairman, I misspoke. Again, there's same-sex benefits. Thank you.
Okay, everybody's clear on the motion then, and you're right, these are issues with alignments that are worked out between House and Senate, so the bill's passed.
It's the Senate. I'm sorry. We've gone back and forth as whether it's same-sex benefits or not, and
it may not. The motion is before us. all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Mr. Chair, I'd renew my motion then that House File 1122, First Committee Grossman, as amended, be recommended passed and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and
Means. Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Any business that I should... just be sure, Joanna reminds me to point out that our next meeting is 10:30 a.m. on Monday, and we'll be taking up some miscellaneous bills. Because we did get through the agenda today, there will be no meeting tomorrow or even on Sunday. Technically, that was our deadline Sunday, but I did, when some people were not here, and this is something important to remember, we do have one major appropriations or finance bill that comes before us next week sometime, hopefully about the middle of the week, and that's the Health and Human Services bill that is still being worked on. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, because it will not be meeting the deadline as a result of the need for fiscal notes and so on from the department, then the motion at that time will be to re-refer that to rules, and then rules will have to re-refer that to ways and means. And that will be a procedural thing, but that will be taken up at that point in time. Do you know anything about the timeline at all? Well, we've got the chair of the policy committee here representing. Wait, still waiting on the fiscal notes. Okay. With that, I want to thank everybody, and I think we've got time for lunch, so we can adjourn.